All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. It is Wednesday. That means Wild Card Wednesday. You mean Wild Card Wednesday? That would be any artist, any song, anything. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here till 5, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. My main man, Steve Cochran, at 6 for your morning drive. All right. Hey, coming up in just a couple of minutes, our good friend Jim Ryan is going to join us. He is a contributor to Forbes. And he writes about music. He's a music journalist, and he's been to a lot of concerts and some festivals, and he's done some interviews, and we're going to talk music with him and talk about some of the stuff that he's written. You can follow him on Twitter, at Radio Jim Ryan, at Radio Jim Ryan. He joins us usually about once a month to catch up on some of the music stuff that he's done and interviews, and we're going to talk music in general, and we're going to play a little music IQ, little music trivia. We'll see how we'll do with that. So Jim is going to be here, and he's in the PPG Paints Green Room right now, the beautiful, lovely PPG Paints Green Room, where you have a fantastic view while you wait to be interviewed by one of us here at WGN, the PPG Paints Green Room. Also coming up, we're going to talk about the best TV show catchphrases, which there are plenty. And then, you know, there are a lot of people who are fans and super fans, and sometimes they go overboard. And they crossed the line. So we're going to talk about some super fans who have gone completely overboard. We'll have another edition of Know Your Onion. And that's where Tom is your host, and he will read you some news headlines. And you have to guess whether the headline is real or whether it's from The Onion. The Onion is the fake news, satirical newspaper, which is brilliant and funny. But the real news is so weird nowadays that it's hard to tell whether or not it's a real headline or an Onion headline. So you guess whether it's real or whether it's Onion, and you win. We'll have two contestants play separately, and we'll play Know Your Onion coming up later on. So that's all happening on the show this morning. We would love to hear from you for talk and text at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That's also the number to text in and call your requests for Wildcard Wednesday. Which is coming up. So you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page. The best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. So that's what's happening on the show. Yeah, and subscribe to our podcasts. I know a lot of people, that's how they listen to the show through the podcasts. It's real easy to do. Subscribe. They will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. And it's free. You can go to iTunes or any place you get your podcast. Subscribe now. So there you go. All right, let's say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm all right. How are you?
Not too shabby. Not okay. Too bad.
All right. So I was talking to you a little bit earlier about the wackadoo Cub game.
True.
Last night. Lester giving up 8 runs in the second inning. It was pretty much over, but it got real goofy towards the end. And I don't know what was going on with the crowd at Wrigley, but not a lot of people left, despite the fact that, you know, at one point they were down 11-0. So, but not, I mean, there was a good amount of crowd, and they were chanting and having, they seemed to be having a really great time when things got very goofy late in the game. Taylor Davis was pitching to, at one point Taylor Davis was pitching to Kyle Schwarber. That was your battery. And he threw upwards around 50, 54 miles an hour with his arm. It's quite impressive. And the game ended up at 11-4, but it was over after the second inning. But I got to say, the last couple of innings were very entertaining. And I mean, at that point, it was like, you know, they took all the starters out and everything. I mean, you know, there's no way they were going to win the game.
No.
And it just got real goofy. Last couple of innings were pretty goofy. the crowd started chanting, "Let's go, Oakland. Let's go, Oakland." and they just, you know, like, you know, Bryant hit a 2-run home run late in the game and people went nuts then. And then, so.
I mean, when the score is looking like that,
yeah,
you got to just have fun. No,
it was 11-0 at one point.
11-0.
8 runs in the second inning. I mean, the game was over immediately. Like, it was like, well, that's 8-0 after the second inning. So,
that's a tough one to come back from.
Yeah, it is. Well, they got a day game today. Wrapping it up against Oakland. Have I told you how much I hate interleague play?
Yeah, you've told me a few times. I don't necessarily understand it, but I accept it.
Yeah, I'm an old man. I'm an old man. The only time that the American League team should play the National League team is in the World Series.
I do find it a little bit frustrating that certain rules change.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
because the American League has different rules from the National League.
If you're in the American League stadium, you got to use a DH. You know what I mean? You know, like they had to. But by the way, their pitcher, Oakland's pitcher last night, got 2 hits.
Good for him.
He's a pitcher in the American League. That means he does not bat. And he got 2 hits last night.
I love it.
Yeah, no, it was pretty. The game, despite the fact how lopsided it was, the game was actually kind of entertaining. I mean, it really was. And, oh, man, why am I blanking on his name? He just came back. He's a pitcher. He was lights out. Like, after Lester had that horrible outing, they pulled Lester and they put in, blanking on his name. He just came back. He was Underwood Jr.? He came in, was lights out. Was lights out. And that got the crowd back into it, was the pitching performance. I think he struck out 9 in a row or something, or 6 in a row, or something to that effect, and was lights out.
Yeah, was it Dwayne Underwood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Underwood. Yeah, Dwayne Underwood Jr., he came in and struck out, I think, 6 or 7 in a row. And the crowd got into it, and everybody was, you know, that's why everybody was all acting goofy. So, in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning.
How are you, man?
I'm okay. I'm glad I missed the game.
I mean, it was ridiculous. Like I said, it was over by the second inning, but it was pretty entertaining. I got to say, it was pretty entertaining.
It was,
you know, by the end, you know, when you have Davis pitching to Schwarber, I don't know. I just found it very, very amusing.
I've never been to a game that took that turn. I mean, I haven't been a
hugely lopsided game.
Yeah, because it's kind of over after the second inning.
Oh, yeah. You know what? And I was listening to a bit of the game early on, and then I went out and I was just like chilling in bed, you know, trying to rest a little bit, and I was listening to the game. Pat Hughes had the night off.
Yeah.
So he missed it. So Pat Hughes didn't have to call that game last night.
Lucky you.
Yeah. But it would have been, I mean, actually, they get goofy and they have fun, he and Coomer, you know, when a game is that lopsided. So I'm sure Pat would have had a field day with it, but he was off last night. So.
Right.
That sounds like one of the most difficult jobs in the world is to be a baseball announcer.
Well, you know.
Especially in a situation like that.
Yeah, but listen, they're really funny. Pat and Ron are great together.
They're very funny.
They're fantastic together. And they do a great job. And when a game is that lopsided in either direction, if the Cubs were up 11-0, it would still get goofy in the booth. And so did Len and Len and JD. They were really goofing around. You know, by the last couple of innings, when things got very goofy on the field, it got very goofy in the booth, and it was very goofy in the crowd. It was just like a goofy air of something going on at Wrigley last night.
Something
it was
in the water.
They got killed. The Cubs got killed last night, but it was entertaining to watch. And I don't say that very often when the Cubs get killed. So, but
sometimes you just gotta have fun with it.
And that's exactly what the crowd did. That's exactly what everybody in the booth, the players, Madden, everybody. You got to see. You have to see. I know that there's got to be footage of Taylor Davis pitching from last night. You have to see it. You have to see it. It's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious.
Like 40 miles an hour?
It was like 40, 50 miles an hour tops. And then he had an at-bat. He was the last out of the game. Taylor Davis was the last out of the game. And his at-bat was like 4.5 minutes long. Like, he kept fouling balls off. There was like 2 outs. They're down 7 runs. You know what I mean? It's like, come on, man. Sure. And he was up to bat. He was in that batter's box. For a really long time. It was a very long at-bat, and then he just flew out. Deep. He sent the ball pretty deep, but he just flew out.
Well, you know, if I were in his position, I'd be like, you know what? I'm gonna see what I can do here. I'm gonna go down swinging.
So JD goes when he comes up to bat. JD goes because they had their they didn't have their closer in, but this guy who the A's had in was a fastball thrower. So he threw like 96, 97 miles per hour. And so JD says, Taylor Davis gets into the box and he goes. I think what Taylor is saying right now is, hey, you want to throw me like a 50-mile-an-hour one like I threw to you? And it was 97 miles an hour. So, anyway, Cubs got killed, but it was entertaining. All right, let's take a quick break here. It is a Wednesday morning, Wild Card Wednesday. Know Your Onion. We're going to talk about best TV catchphrases and how superfans go too far. But when we come back, fresh from the PPG Paints Green Room, it's music journalist Jim Ryan to join us. We'll talk all things music, all the concerts and festivals that he's done and interviews that he's done recently, and we'll play a round of Music IQ trivia. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here until 5 o'clock, I'm Nick DiGilio, and at 5 o'clock, following this show is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich, and then at 6 o'clock, you got your morning drive with the great Steve Cochran. Coming up a little bit later on the show, we're going to be talking about the best TV catchphrases, super fans who go overboard, and to play another round of Know Your Onion. That's all coming up right here on the show. It is Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. Yeah. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Okay. Our good friend Jim Ryan joins us usually about once a month. He's a contributor to Forbes.com. He writes about music, and he interviews musicians and all kinds of cool stuff. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan, and he joins us this morning. Jim, how are you?
I'm good, Nick. Recovering still, but not too bad.
Recovering from the Lollapalooza
right.
Weekend.
Yes.
We're going to go through that. And you also went to... It's been a little bit... You were here before you went to Pitchfork?
Yeah, I think right before
Pitchfork.
I think right before.
Yeah, and that was the weekend where it was 190 degrees.
Yes, it was, which usually we get at Lollapalooza, but not this year.
Yeah, so I remember, because we had our good buddy Esmeralda.
Right, I ran into Esmeralda at Pitchfork, yes.
Did you? Mm-hmm. She came by for a visit a couple of Fridays ago, the Friday right before Pitchfork, and we had some fun, obviously, and she said, yeah, I'm going to Pitchfork. I'm like, enjoy the heat.
Yeah, that's... yep.
But my God, didn't even leave. I have my apartment. I have a window unit in my bedroom.
Okay,
and the rest of my apartment is not air conditioned at all.
Oh God!
So I stayed with my parents.
Oh man,
I stayed for 3 days with my folks.
I'm in a garden unit now for the first time.
Oh well, that helps.
It's like a built-in air conditioner a little bit, so yeah. We don't really have to kick it on too often, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I live on the second floor, so yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. But anyway, that weekend it was really, really hot when you went to Pitchfork.
Yes, it was.
How did that affect the activities?
Well, it wasn't even just the heat. We got a lot of rain that weekend, too. Saturday, it rained in the middle of the afternoon, maybe like 4 o'clock, and they evacuated the park because of that, which is always at a festival when you're evacuating tens of thousands of people onto city streets. It's never easy. It's never efficient, especially getting back in.
Yeah.
Then they're in a hurry. That seems like, you know, that seems like the time to sneak in, actually, when they're hoarding thousands of people back into the festival.
Yeah.
Just skedaddle on
in. Well, we were, you know, like my parents live on the Northwest side, and it came and went pretty quickly. It was intense.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, whoa, like end of the world kind of stuff for about 5 minutes, and then... Yep. you know, lasted about 10 more minutes and it was done. But it dumped a lot. It dumped a lot of water, though. It dumped a lot of rain.
Yeah, it was really muddy in Union Park. Saturday was the day that was impacted by that the worst, because there was actually a set cancellation because of it. Once they resumed, everyone performed except Kurt Vile. Kurt Vile was supposed to perform, I think, at like 5 or 5:30, and he actually got outright canceled.
Yeah.
So that was Saturday. And then Sunday, it rained again, but that was in the morning, so it delayed the gates opening. But mm-hmm. nobody was canceled. Everything went on as scheduled. So it could have been worse, but it was quite muddy in Union Park on Sunday, so that's... Yeah. Always fun.
So there's a Pitchfork. So let's talk a little bit about you wrote about some of that stuff. Who were some of the highlights at Pitchfork this hot and wet year?
Mavis Staples. She's unbelievable. And she was on Friday evening, I believe, at 6 o'clock. She wasn't headlining. Haim was headlining, and Mavis Staples was on earlier.
The weirdest bass player.
Yeah.
Haim, the weirdest woman. I don't know what's going on with her.
Yeah.
Every time I see them perform, I'm like, what's wrong with her?
It was an amazing thing, too, because Mavis Staples comes out on stage at 80 years old in 100. It's still 100 degrees out, right? Man. And she absolutely kills it. The heat is no issue whatsoever. You know, she's telling these, you know, unbelievable stories about, you know, performing with her family band, the Staples Singers, and marching for civil rights with Martin Luther King. I mean, she's got...
Yeah,
stories with depth, right?
Absolutely.
And then Haim comes out in the... It was... I think if they had been on after anyone but her, you wouldn't even notice something like this. But they come out, and the deepest story we got from the Haim sisters was the time the three of them were at a birthday party together, and they were really upset that the DJ wouldn't play their Paula Cole requests. And then they proceeded to cover Paula Cole twice. Two consecutive Paula Cole covers. I was like, there's a real juxtaposition here between the two worlds that these two groups grew up in, the Staples Singers versus Haim. I was like, wow, this is something here.
Yeah. Well, had you ever seen Mavis Staples before?
I've seen her a bunch of times, but not in a couple of years. And, you know, she's another one like Buddy Guy, where every year I go see Buddy Guy in January when he does his residency at Legends, and you kind of go... You go in there a little trepidation. Yeah. Going, I hope this isn't the year. You go, oh, man, it's starting to go.
Yeah.
And it never is. And, I mean, Mavis Staples, my God, at 80 years old in that heat, I'm out there, right, like, oh, this heat.
Yeah.
She's up there killing it on stage, and she's just phenomenal.
I've seen her a couple times. She's amazing.
Her new album
is amazing.
She's in the middle of this. This is kind of what I wrote about, that she's in the middle of this career rebirth where I think over the course of 7 studio albums since 2007... 3 with Jeff Tweedy producing, 1 with M. Ward producing, the new one is Ben Harper producing on it.
Wow.
I think those artists have really introduced her to a whole new, you know, age group, and it's really something to watch, especially at a festival, because then you see the younger end.
Well, what was the crowd like?
It was really mixed. Pitchfork, to me, is always really mixed. I never know who they're even aiming, you know, the lineup at, because you have Mavis Staples and then Haim and then the Isley Brothers. To me, that lineup is all over the place in a good way. But so you did have quite a mix of young and old. It was all over the place.
Now, how long did she play?
An hour.
She did an hour.
She did an hour set.
Okay.
And she did Staples Singers covers. You know, it's this to see Mavis Staples in 2019. I mean, she had the most pointed political commentary on stage of the weekend, with the stories and the experiences to back it up. Right. I mean, everything that's going on in the world, that's not exactly new to her.
Yeah.
But she was. You know, it was astounding. She's covered for a while in her set, Slippery People by the Talking Heads.
Mm.
And I think it's more appropriate than it's ever been in 2019. It was a pretty impressive set.
Yeah, she's great, man. And again, as you said, 80 years old, 100 degrees outside.
Kills it.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. I couldn't last 5 minutes in
That's
that kind of heat.
Exactly
and,
right.
And here she is, 80 years old, killing. But she's always great. I mean, she's always been great. I mean, it's amazing. Isley Brothers, how were they?
This is one of those ones. I don't know that ever in my life I expected to find myself front and center in an Isley Brothers concert, and yet, thanks to Pitchfork, there it was. I forgot what kind of an impact they had on 90s hip-hop.
Oh, yeah.
They had so many songs that were sampled by some of those artists. I would say maybe second only to George Clinton in that regard. And they opened up with a couple of them right in a row. They did the one that Ice Cube samples, and It Was a Good Day.
Yeah.
They did that one. I can't even think of the name of it now. Between the Sheets, that's the one that Notorious B.I.G. sampled, right? So they did both of those right in a row, as if to, you know, for the younger end of the crowd, like, Have you heard this before? Does this sound familiar?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I love the Isley Brothers.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, they're great.
I didn't realize how many hits they've had. I mean, they closed with Shout, and I'm like, that's right, that's the Isley Brothers. Like,
yes, it is.
It's crazy.
You think of Otis Day and the Nights, but in fact, exactly it was the Isley Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right, Jim, hang on, okay?
All right,
Jim Ryan is with us. He writes about music for Forbes and other places. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. We'll talk more about Pitchfork. We've got Lollapalooza interviews, all kinds of great stuff. We'll play a little music trivia, too. All that right here on 720 WGN after the news, which is next. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. We're going to be talking about some of the most memorable and the best TV show catchphrases. We got Sometimes Superfans Go Too Far and another round of Know Your Onion. So get ready for that. Right now, though, Jim Ryan is with us, contributor to Forbes.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. And he writes about music and goes to lots of concerts and festivals and all that cool stuff. So we're catching up with Jim. And we'll play a little Music IQ. Are you ready for another edition of Music IQ?
I don't think I'm ever ready.
Did I win the last one?
I think you did win the last one.
Yeah, I think I did. Okay. Well, let's see.
I think Tom started out big time and then fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I think you may be right. It's funny because, like, off the air, we were just talking about how much we love the show Barry.
Yeah. So good.
Because you asked if I was going to go to Wizard World, and you're going to Wizard World for one reason and one reason alone.
Henry Winkler. I got to meet the Fonz.
You got to meet the Fonz. Yeah. And but we were, that's got us talking about Barry, and then that got us talking about the Lily Ronnie episode.
Oh my God.
Of Barry, which is one of the greatest episodes of television I've ever seen in my life.
That kid is hilarious.
She's unbelievable. The little girl is unbelievable.
Yeah.
We were just talking about how Stephen Root finally got an Emmy nomination.
First
time he's ever been nominated.
That in itself is astounding.
Yeah.
But when I started watching Barry, it was on your recommendation, and I didn't know that Stephen Root was in it.
Oh, yeah.
And when I turned it on and he's on my TV, I was like, yes.
Yeah. No, fantastic. Everything about that show is great. So enjoy Wizard World and meeting Henry Winkler.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back to Pitchfork, as we were talking about that hot, wet weekend. Isley Brothers, you said, were awesome.
They were
obviously
so good.
Mavis Staples goes without saying.
She's always, yeah.
Who else did you see? You saw Stereolab, Belle and Sebastian?
Stereolab, Belle and Sebastian. Belle and Sebastian were doing an album, a 90s album all the way through. And those kind of performances are always, they're hit or miss to me at a festival, especially something like Belle and Sebastian where there's such lush, delicate instrumentation. I think they had a 6-piece string section on stage with them. That's not difficult. That's not easy to pull off in Union Park, but they did a nice job with that.
Mm-hmm.
Stereolab is reunited, and I didn't know much about them, honestly, going into it. That's an interesting thing. Are you familiar with them?
Not really.
It's a lot of electropop.
That's what I
French vocals on a lot of songs. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was different, for sure. They were the first band on after
the storm.
Park reopened the storms on Saturday. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And who else?
What else did I see? That's a good question, Nick. I should pull up my...
the festival is 3 days long,
Three days, yeah. That's...
Friday through Sunday
in Union Park, so... Mm-hmm. Pitchfork is always an interesting one. Always fantastic people watching. That's really where you get your hipster invasion of Chicagoland.
Oh, is that right?
You see a lot of 1989 NBA jerseys, you know, all of these... all of these things that we associate with hipsters in 2019.
1989 NBA jerseys.
Have you not seen this trend like during festival season where you just see like a horde of like 15 people walking down the street in old basketball jerseys? This is the thing.
Yeah,
now.
I don't go out.
The hoopsters.
I don't go out much.
this is what you're missing.
Again, I'm missing all this. Tom, are you familiar with this?
Yeah. Have you not seen me wear my Seattle Sonics jersey?
I don't.
Are you a hipster, Tom?
I am not, but my brother associates. He's a bit younger than me, about 4 years younger than me. And whenever he has friends around, they're all inexplicably wearing, you know, 80s and early 90s basketball jerseys. I just don't know why.
When did this start?
A couple of years ago.
I don't even know what's going on anymore. I'm an old man. I'm an old man. That's all there is to it.
A couple of years ago, I ran into a cousin of mine from Kansas at Lollapalooza. Didn't know he was going to be there, and I see him walking toward me. And it's just like, nice Muggsy Bogues jersey. where did you find that?
Why is it that specific? I don't understand. I just don't get it.
I want to go dig all of them out of my parents' basement and sell them on eBay while this is still a
well,
thing.
Well, sure, you can
you
make some dough.
Sixer Sean Bradley jersey. I got you covered.
Yeah, I got. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, so, it's a thing.
All right, now, so I do want to mention. You know, I've been talking about how I'm an old man. I don't think Tom. I don't think you've heard the story about this quote right here.
I am just an old man trying to get some wedges.
So that's what happened was, this was a bunch of years ago when I was living in Andersonville. I lived about four blocks away from a Kentucky Fried Chicken, a KFC, which is, you know, a Clark and Ashland where the Jewels is. It's a bank now, but it used to be a KFC.
Okay, so I live a couple blocks from
I live right around the corner from there. Yeah. So I lived at Balmoral and Polina, so I would just go right there. So I go in there one day. And I'm online at the KFC, and there's an old man in front of me. Okay, and he didn't seem very happy about anything. And so, but there was a really overly friendly woman working the counter.
Okay,
like, "Hi, sweetheart, how you doing, honey?" You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fine. You know,
sure.
it's nice.
Has its place. Yeah.
Person, you know, the person wants to make people feel good, calling them honey,
wonderful.
Sweetheart. Oh, it's nice day. Have a wonderful day. You know, like that kind of thing. Just very cheery, wonderful kind of person. Like to call people sweetheart and honey and all that stuff. She was doing it for everybody that would come up, and the old man gets up there, and he's just kind of great. He, you can see he's got the posture of, like, you know, he's bent over and he's you know, he's like the dude from Up, you know.
Okay.
So he walks up to the counter, and she's like, "How are you this morning, sweetheart?" And he's like, "Don't call me sweetheart." And she's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. No, look, I don't call me honey. Don't call me sweetheart. You don't have to say hi to me. I'm just an old man trying to get some wedges." Because he wanted the potato wedges.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So when I heard that, I busted out laughing.
I would too, yeah.
And so I am
just an old man trying to get some wedges.
That's all he wanted. He didn't need to be called sweetheart or anything. So whenever I talk about being an old man, I usually bust out that clip.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm just an old man trying to get some wedges. And he was, and then she just was very, very quiet. He got his wedges and he left.
She gave him some wedges.
And I came up and she's like, "How you doing, sweetheart?" And I'm like, I don't want wedges. I'm fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, now you can be an old man trying to get your, you know, Detroit Pistons Dennis Rodman jersey.
I don't understand. I just don't understand kids. I don't know what's going on.
I seriously want to sell all of these on eBay.
I think you probably could. I mean, if that's a thing, I swear to you, I don't go out anymore.
Penny Hardaway, Orlando Magic.
I especially don't go out where there are young people. I just don't, I don't do that. And
you should really.
So I have no idea what's going. No way.
One day out of the four,
could not pay me to go to Lollapalooza. No way would I go to Lollapalooza. I almost went to Pitchfork when the Mats reunited.
That was Riot Fest.
That was Riot Fest,
and
right? That was Riot
Fest. That's another one every September. I'm like, come on, Nick.
Yeah. Well, that's the only one. That's the only one. Riot Fest is the only one that I would ever be tempted to go to.
That's the most mellow crowd of all of these festivals.
It usually has the best lineup, or the lineup that I would like the most.
Right.
But the Mats played a couple of years ago.
They were great.
I know they were.
Well, come this year. Come this year to Riot Fest. We'll go see Slayer.
You got to go see Slayer.
Come on. Yeah. All right. Have you ever seen Gwar?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. See, because I've told people this before. You have to at least one time in your life you have to see Gwar. It is absolutely necessary. I've only seen him once.
I would like to go see them when they do like House of Blues or something, because I've only seen them at Riot Fest. I've only seen them at festivals.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I saw him twice. And both times at the Riv.
Okay.
And
were you eaten by the thing?
I was not eaten by the thing. I was up in the balcony, so I was away from the bodily
That's
fluids.
That's the perfect way to
Although
do it.
Although they do shoot the body fluid. It does get up into the balcony. But
like,
it's just
like Gallagher.
Like, no, it's not like
good
Gallagher.
Good nights and bad nights.
It's a No, but seriously, they're all the members of Gwar, and even, you know, it's sad because a few of them have passed.
Have passed, yeah.
But they're theater geeks.
Oh yeah,
they're high school theater.
You can see that in their sets.
Absolutely, they're theater dorks.
Oh yeah,
and I don't own a Gwar album. I don't listen to Gwar.
You don't celebrate the entire catalog?
No, I do not. It's not like I'm at home going, you know, I think I'll put on some Gwar. I've never done that ever. But the two shows that I've seen,
yeah,
are unbelievable. They're unbelievable. You have to see Gwar.
I say every year following Riot Fest that perhaps my favorite moment at that festival every year, going on 5 or 6 years now, is when they trot Gwar in full costume through the media section,
right,
because people who don't know it's coming and who don't know who it is and who are just back there because there's cheap alcohol, right, start looking around like, what the hell is happening? And the looks on people's faces as Gwar just trots through it like nothing's, yeah, out of the ordinary,
I mean,
is
my
favorite.
You know, you've got like they rip babies out of things,
yes,
and they shoot all kinds of bodily fluids all over the place,
yeah,
and it's ridiculously theatrical and absolutely entertaining.
Every year I get an interview with Gwar that lasts about 2.5 minutes and is totally unusable,
exactly,
in any place I write about, and I do it anyway.
Tom, when have you seen Gwar?
I think I caught him at Riot. They've played Riot Fest before.
They are one of two artists who have performed at every Riot Fest.
Seriously?
One of two artists who
performed
at everyone. Come on, you know this.
No.
Andrew WK.
Oh, right.
Oh, jeez. Party hard.
That's right.
That's right. And you've hung out with Andrew WK.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
at,
that
every year at Riot Fest.
At,
yeah,
Riot Fest. So Riot Fest coming up in September?
September 13th through the 15th.
Now, who are some of the headliners?
Tom mentioned Slayer. That's pretty,
yeah,
great.
Okay.
They're billing that as the final Chicago/Milwaukee appearance,
Slayer?
Even though there's an appearance in Rockford, which apparently doesn't count.
That's not a Chicago area?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Rockford, baby.
That's, yeah, an amazing lineup, though, by the way. It's Slayer, Primus, Phil Anselmo doing only Pantera, and there's one more band on there. There's a fourth band. A Ministry.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Ministry.
Ow.
Ministry, Phil Anselmo, Primus, and Slayer.
Wow.
How is that for an amazing...
That's something. That's something.
In Rockford.
Yeah.
Moline.
If you've not seen...
Either way.
Primus, that's another band that you should see. Primus is pretty insane. I went to the... Last time I saw him was in that 3D... Was the 3D tour, which makes a lot of sense since everything is in 3D.
Yeah.
But that Claypool, man, he's something.
Oh, he's
something, man.
Les and Al Jorgensen,
yeah,
on the same tour. That's
on the same bill.
That's amazing.
Oh, my God.
Do you think Ministry will do the early stuff?
Yeah.
They've been doing a lot of the early stuff.
Like with Sympathy?
They've actually been doing a... They did 6 months ago, maybe. They did a show at House of Vans, where they were following a screening of the Wax Trax documentary.
Oh, yeah.
They did an entire set of Wax Trax stuff.
Yeah, okay.
They did Every Day is Halloween. They did a lot of that stuff that I couldn't believe they were doing.
Did they do Work for Love? Did they do that?
I don't remember now. I got to look it up.
Yeah, well, Wax Trax, that makes sense. I mean, it had to be a celebration for that. But I'm surprised that Al Jorgensen would even think about doing those.
Yeah,
those
he
songs.
Said it. He's like, he's all mad up there. He's like, I don't usually play this stuff.
Yeah.
We don't usually do this, but we're doing it anyway.
Well, he spit at my friend for bringing
this story.
Like, what the hell happened after that first album?
that's what happens when you ask Al a question like that.
He was not in good shape at that time. He kind of staggered into the common room, was like, you know, the dreadlocks,
right.
The whole thing. All right. So what now? What about what's going on at not Pitchfork?
At Riot Fest?
At Riot Fest, yeah.
Bikini Kill. That to me is pretty cool. Kathleen,
yeah,
Hanna.
Okay.
Reprising that. Your headliners are Blink-182, Slayer, Bikini Kill, The Rock on Tour, So Jack White is Back, Rise Against, The Flaming Lips, Jawbreaker, Ween, Patti Smith, Taking Back Sunday, Rancid, Violent Femmes, The B-52s, and The Village People, Nick. The Village People will be at Riot
Fest.
See,
here's the thing. That's a lineup that I could go with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
uh-huh,
like you mentioned a bunch of bands that I would really enjoy watching.
Yeah. That's always... To me, that's my favorite one every year.
Yeah, no, clearly.
It's
whenever we talk about the festival,
it's an older crowd.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
wait.
It's my age.
Yeah, they're here. Hold on a second. Yeah.
I am just an old man trying to get some wedges.
You're going
to
hear that throughout the park. All right. Hang on,
yes.
Jim. We got a lot more to talk about. We haven't even got to Lollapalooza yet, but we will. Jim is here. Jim Ryan. He's a contributor to Forbes.com. We're going to do some music trivia as well, play a little Music IQ. It's all coming up right here. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. See, this was when Ministry was good. That's when Ministry was good.
They're still fantastic.
What the hell happened after that first album?
Don't let Al hear this.
No. Yeah, I'm sure Al's listening.
He's seething.
He's up. Driving around in his Lamborghini going 90 down Ashland. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So there you go. There's Al Jurgensen. Nick DiGilio here, and Jim Ryan is here, and we're talking about music and all kinds of other cool things. Tell me about did you see Nana Cherry?
Yeah, she was at Pitchfork.
Yeah, yes. Tell me about that.
That was fantastic. I didn't know what to expect from that. I don't know much of her catalog outside Buffalo Stance.
Yeah,
which she closed with, by the way.
Yeah. I just have that album.
That's
the
I
only.
Know.
That's the only. I mean, I know that album.
She's never stopped putting stuff out. That's, you know, she was up there with a full band. She had a harp player on stage because if you're going to deliver Buffalo Stance, Nick, live, you certainly obviously need a harp player to accomplish that. But she was wonderful. Like, yeah, I was blown away by how good she was. And she was on the blue stage, which is the small stage kind of offset into the corner at the festival. And mm-hmm. She was fired up. She was firing away on her president. She was quite great.
Yeah. Okay.
That's another one. There were so many acts this year at Pitchfork that it was like, I can't believe I'm seeing these artists in 2019.
Yeah.
And again, in a totally good way.
You know, her brother, Eagle Eye.
Eagle Eye. Stepbrother or half-brother or something.
Half-brother, I know that they're, it's Eagle Eye Cherry. And what the hell was his, he had one hit.
Save Tonight.
Oh, yeah. Save Tonight.
Wait, hold on. Eagle Eye Cherry is a guy's name?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a band name.
No, it's the guy.
It's
Eagle
like
Eye
a
Cherry.
Name is Eagle Eye Cherry.
Eagle Eye Cherry. Save Tonight.
Yeah, he had a whopping one hit.
That was his one hit.
Yeah. And then their father, Don Cherry, is a jazz musician.
Absolutely, yep.
And then, are they related to Ava Cherry? Who did a bunch of stuff with Bowie?
Wait a minute. Maybe
does
they are. Yes,
I
think they are. I think they are.
Think so.
I think they're related, yeah.
So there you go.
All right, what about Robin?
Robin was another good one. This was, the Sunday was pretty much reserved for pop music. Because mm-hmm. you had Robin, you had Charlie XCX. Those were the two headliners on Sunday. Robin performed with a full band, mm-hmm. which to me always makes a huge difference in terms of translating pop music live to an audience. I think it always suffers when it's just somebody out there singing in front of a backing track.
Yeah.
She had a full band, tons of costume changes. It was like an arena show on stage at a festival. It was great.
Oh, she was the headliner?
She was the headliner pretty much of the whole festival is how they were billing her, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she closed everything out on Sunday. She was on right after Charlie XCX.
And so how was that?
Charlie XCX was... Mm-hmm. So she was the polar opposite of Robin because she performed... She was the only performer on stage with a backing track. So it was two opposite ends of really how you're going to present pop music. But I would say both were pretty successful. Charlie XCX has a new album coming out, and she's another one. For pop music, if I'm going to have that crammed down my throat by radio, I can deal with Charlie XCX or Robin.
The only exposure that I've had to Charlie XCX is SNL.
Okay,
she was a musical guest on SNL.
I've seen her a bunch of times, and it's always at festivals.
Yeah, I mean it was fine. She was good.
She was opening. I think she opened the last leg of the Taylor Swift arena tour.
Oh, did she really?
Yeah, so.
Hey, speaking of arenas, last night Babs played.
Yeah.
At the United Center. And Barbara Streisand.
How old is she at this point?
She's in her 70s.
Okay.
Here's the thing that was surprising to me. Like, a lot of people on my news feed were there.
I had a couple in mind, too, because I had no idea she was even coming
to town. I had no idea either.
And then I saw those photos.
And then Ariana Grande showed up.
Oh, did she perform with them?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know what they sang together, but somebody posted some pictures of the two of them on stage.
That's a interesting combo.
But it was interesting. But what was funny is that there was so it was like a wide-ranging group of people on my news feed.
Yeah, same here.
Some that you would go, okay, I can understand why you're going to see Barbara Streisand. You know what I mean?
We're talking on my feed. It was guys in their 30s.
You know, yeah. And then I had like young people. Yeah. I was like, what's going on? I guess people love the Barbara.
I didn't know this was the thing.
Yeah. My mom adores.
My mom would have totally gone to that. My mom and my aunt would have been all over that.
There's no question about it. But that's my mom. She's in her 70s. So, you know, that makes sense that she would go. But, yeah, I had like, there was a bunch of.
I saw it too.
And a couple of hoopsters, I think, went and wore their.
What's the appropriate jersey
for Barbara Streisand.
For a Barbara Streisand concert.
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
Yeah?
I don't know. maybe a bird. Maybe a Larry Bird.
Larry okay, Bird.
Sure.
Sure.
Larry Bird, Bird works.
Yeah. All right.
Can't argue that.
How about McHale?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Why did we go? Why suddenly was it a Boston thing? When did Barbra Streisand become associated with Boston?
With Boston.
A huge Celtic fan. Huge Celtics fan.
Little known facts about Streisand.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wonder how it was.
I've never seen her. The photo I saw was from somebody who was sitting up top, and clearly there was a huge band behind her.
Yeah.
So that would have at least been good.
I would imagine that, she could get any musician in the world that she wants to play with her.
Every time I see somebody from that generation, they're almost always, without fail, fantastic, because I think at this point, it's muscle memory. They've been doing it for so long.
Oh, of course.
Like, they're just, it's in their blood. They're just fantastic performers.
No, there's no question about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really funny because a really dear friend of mine, a guy named Mitchell Fain, who is an actor, and I've done shows with him years ago, he is... as gay as you can possibly get. He was in all his glory last night, according to Facebook. Like a group of his friends went, and they were in heaven during the Barbra Streisand show.
Nice.
Which is fantastic, because Mitchell's a lovely guy, and he loves Barbra Streisand, obviously. And so I just can't imagine what it would be like to stand next to my friend Mitchell at a Barbra Streisand concert.
And I think, just watch the way he enjoys
it. Oh, my God. It would be unbelievable. And they had really good seats, too. So he
I wonder what those cost, by the way.
No idea.
She's another one, I think, who's right up there every time she tours, raising the bar.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't even, I haven't even checked. I'm getting tickets, but I haven't even checked how much Madonna.
Oh man, those got to be
at the Chicago Theater, because I'm seeing her in the Chicago Theater.
No, that's unbelievable. How many nights is she doing?
Four.
Now?
She's doing four nights.
Is it only four?
I think it's four. I know I'm going. I don't care.
I want to cover one of those
so
bad.
If you've never, have you ever seen
one time at United Center?
For which tour do you remember?
It was the last one, the most recent one. So 2016,
MDNA. Yeah. I was there at that show. I've seen her five times.
Okay.
But I mean, just the fact that she's playing
a small place.
Oh my God.
I mean, it looked, is that a full tour she's doing like that?
Yeah.
Or is this
I mean, she's picking
a couple
she's
markets.
Not,
in,
yeah, yeah, right. yeah. Big markets. Like, she's doing LA. I think she did LA already.
Okay.
And I think New York, she's doing a Radio City Music Hall in New York. And I think she's doing like, over a week.
Wow. She could probably do two more.
Easily
in New York,
yeah. I mean,
City?
In New York,
oh my god!
In New York, she could just do. She could do a month. Yeah. She could do a month.
Well, apparently, she's doing the Howard Gilman Opera House.
Where
in New York?
In New York,
yeah.
I thought she was doing Radio City.
Wow,
she may have already done it. I'm looking at the tour right now.
It's October. Yeah, it's October for us.
Yeah, she's going to be in New York City from September 12th to October 7th.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All at this opera house.
That makes
you got Chicago
sense.
Theater here, Vegas at the doing the Coliseum at Caesars.
Oh man,
Wiltern Theater in L.A. The Met in Philadelphia, Wang Theater in Boston.
Wow,
I'm looking at the prices right now for Chicago Theater.
Yeah,
the VIP packages.
Uh huh.
Do you want to guess a range on this before I tell you?
$3,500.
I see. I'm surprised that it's not more. $753 to $999.
Is that all?
There's got to be.
Oh, well,
more.
That's face that all. But that's face value, right?
That's face value.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's not what they're going for now, because you're not going to be able to get those.
You can get in the door for $256, which is less than I thought it would take to get in the door. Actually,
the last time I saw her, I paid $200. Last time I saw her, and I had good seats too.
And there's still seats left, unless I'm looking at all scalpers.
Oh, that's
stuff.
Insane. Well, it's probably all scalpers.
Yeah.
Okay, we got a break here for the news. Jim, hang on. We'll talk more Madonna later. The news is coming up next. Song was written for Sean Penn. Yes, it was.
A love story for the ages.
Absolutely.
Involving a baseball bat? I think, right?
Yeah.
Allegedly?
Allegedly. They had a pretty tumultuous relationship, to say the least. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WG, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio that, of course, is the great Madonna, who's coming to town in October and playing the Chicago Theater, which is very
That's
unusual.
That's unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Jim Ryan is with us. He's a contributor to Forbes.com. He writes about music and interviews musicians and all kinds of cool stuff. Coming up later on, we're going to be talking about some of the best TV show catchphrases. We got another round of Know Your Onion coming up, and much more. Before we get to Lollapalooza,
yeah,
what about this Cage the Elephant Beck and Spoon?
Oh my God,
tell us about that.
That's one that might be up until right now. Anyway, that's the show of the summer so far,
mm-hmm.
and we're kind of running out of time, so I don't know anything else can top it. Wild Bell from Chicago, Spoon, Cage the Elephant, and Beck. Mm. That's the package tour that stopped at Northerly Island last Wednesday, so the night before Lollapalooza. So Lollapalooza started for me Thursday, but that whole week really started Wednesday at Northerly Island.
Well, tell me about the show.
Cage the Elephant, I would say, has become one of the greatest live acts in America. They've been around since 2008, and they've amassed a crazy number of hit singles. And just live, their lead singer Matt Schultz is quite a stage presence. They did a set earlier in the afternoon at Reggie's in the South Loop in front of a couple hundred people, and then did the headlining set later that night at Northerly Island. At the end of the set, it was almost as if Matt Schultz of Cage the Elephant was challenging Beck, like, okay, top this, because Beck was headlining. He took a stage dive. He was channeling, you'll get this of all people, he was channeling Eddie Vedder
sure.
in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Takes a stage dive and crowd surfs all the way from the stage to the back of the seated area, lands on the platform where the wheelchairs and stuff are set up, because from there he can climb onto the soundboard. So he climbs the rigging in the canopy for the soundboard and gets on top of the soundboard.
What?
And then starts climbing a lighting rig. He was a good 30 feet in the air by the time he got to the top of this lighting rig. And everybody's kind of looking like, what the hell is he going to do now?
Yeah.
He climbed down because it was too high
to dive.
Even for an Eddie Vedder dive in the 90s.
Yeah.
Climbs down and then proceeded to stage to crowd surf back toward the stage. It was ridiculous, and it took like 20 minutes to do this entire thing, and it was
wow.
I was like, I haven't seen something like this since like the 90s.
Yeah I've seen Eddie Vedder scale a lot of crazy stuff, mm-hmm. Back in the early days, and drop from ceilings.
Right,
he dropped from the ceiling of the Metro, you know.
Were you at that show, the Metro show?
Yeah I saw him at the Metro a couple times.
Wow.
This was like the first time I saw Pearl Jam was before 10 came out.
Isn't there one of them where they're on the same bill as Nirvana?
Nirvana, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Were you at that one?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
He did. And when they played Lollapalooza, when Lollapalooza was the touring
right.
thing.
In the 90s,
and they
sure.
played the Tweeter Center, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
What's it called now?
Hollywood Casino Amphitheater.
Okay, that place in Tinley Park. He climbed out. He was on top of the. He was like
the pavilion.
Yeah.
Oh man.
He was climbing around on that like a lunatic, and that was at the Lollapalooza 92. Was it 91? 91.
That was 91.
91.
No, 92. They were on the second one. I don't think the first one, right?
Yeah. No, the first one was 91, right?
First one was 91.
Yeah. So that was 92 because it was Soundgarden. It was
right.
It was
Jane's Addiction.
Pearl Jam, Jane's Addiction. Chili Peppers.
Nine Inch Nails.
No, Chili Peppers. No, yeah, Nine Inch Nails.
Nine Inch Nails. Ministry.
Now,
I believe
was Ministry. I'm getting them confused because
I'm getting the first two confused.
Well, I get the because I went to like the first four.
Okay,
first yeah,
Ice-T and Ice Cube. I think were on the first two.
Yeah, there was the one where Primus.
Okay,
that's
played. The third one. I think
Primus played.
I do have the lineup if you want the.
Okay, what do we got? This is 91.
Are you looking? This is 92.
92.
92 was Chili Peppers, Ministry, Ice Cube, Soundgarden, Jesus and Mary Chain, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, and Lush. And then you had on the side stage, like Rage Against the Machine, Tool, Smashing Pumpkins.
On the side stage.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cypress Hill.
Nine Inch Nails were there. Temple of the Dog.
Well, sure. Both bands are there.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, why not do some Temple of the Dog?
Is that probably the only times I don't remember Temple of the Dog tours? That might have been some of the only live shows they did.
Temple of the Dog, they did not tour. Or at least they never came to Chicago.
So that might have been... Well, then they did the reunion stuff a couple years ago, which didn't come here, but that doesn't even count.
Yeah.
But.
Well, I mean, the Soundgarden and Pearl Jam are there. So you
might as well. Yeah. Might as well go kick out a little hunger strike.
Yeah,
why
exactly.
Not?
Why not? And then there was the year that Fishbone played.
That was the third one, yeah.
When was Arrested Development on that?
They were on, I think, that third one, too, yeah.
That's 93.
Oh, no, they were on... Yeah.
What was it? What was the lineup there?
Primus, Alice in Chains, Dinosaur Jr., Fishbone, Arrested Development, Front 242, George Clinton, Babes in Toyland, Tool, and Rage Against the Machine.
I went in 94, which was the fourth one. So it was Smashing Pumpkins, The Beastie Boys, Tribe Called Quest, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, The Breeders, The Boredoms, L7. And George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars.
Wow, you just nailed it.
I went to the first four.
Okay.
Of Lollapalooza.
Those are some great lineups.
No, they were great.
It
was great, especially at that time.
And everybody always says, you know, it's alternative, but we just mentioned several rappers. We mentioned a funk legend.
Yeah.
There was, you know, industrial. There was those lineups, I think, back then did a nice job of exposing some different sounds to people.
Yeah, they did. And now it's turned into a monstrous nightmare in this city. All right, how was Beck?
Oh, Beck was wonderful. The set was very similar to what he did last year at Riot Fest. But he's up there with a full band, and I think people forget, like, Beck is a pretty good guitar player. Beck can sing. Beck can dance. He can do all these things in addition to just having, you know, a couple of hits in the 90s. And he's another one who's never stopped. He's got so many hits now, it's ridiculous. I mean, he headlined, I think, about an hour and a half, and it is just, I mean, he's another one where I could tell you songs he didn't play that are hits, and it's just, it's ridiculous.
I've never been a Beck guy.
Have you ever seen him live?
No.
So last year at Riot Fest, he was headlining, and I was with a bunch of people who all said the exact same thing, like, I have no interest in seeing Beck. I'm like, yeah, you should see him live. And everybody walked out of there like, that was fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, I just, you know... he's never been. The only album that I like is the one that was all the breakup album.
Sea Change?
Unbelievable record.
He did, what's the single from that song? Lost Cause?
Yeah.
He did Lost Cause. Solo Electric.
Yeah, see, that, I like that. I like that album because it's depressing.
Yeah.
It's
terrific, though.
Yeah, no, it is.
He's a strange dude, though. Scientologist.
Yeah. Well, so is Elizabeth Moss. Don't hold that against her. what about Spoon?
They're another one. I love, like, I'd only seen Spoon at festivals, and I want to see them indoors now because this was another one where they're just fantastic. I mean, there's that hint of psychedelic stuff in their music, but I think there's a lot of power pop influence there, and just, they're dynamite. 40 minutes was not enough at Northerly Island. I could have easily done twice that.
Yeah.
So it was great, and then Chicago's own Wild Bell opened. It was really, that's the best show I've seen all summer.
Very cool. All right, that sounds like a great lineup there. And even though it was at
Northerly
Island.
You have to navigate that place.
Which we bitch about every single time that you're on the show.
Comes up.
Yeah. We complain about how bad Northerly Island is.
There's just no good way to get in there.
No,
you can't.
Did you go to Dave in July?
Alpine.
You went to Alpine?
I went to Alpine.
What was
July
the set list? Was it a good set list? That's my birthday.
It was a great set list. Broke out the Sledgehammer cover.
Nice.
Which is always shockingly good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Alpine was one of the only dates on the entire tour that had an opener. Preservation Hall Jazz Band was the opening
act. That's cool.
And then so they brought him out and they did a couple songs with them during the set too.
Yeah.
So it was.
That's cool.
It was quite great. At Alpine Valley, they can. I think that's the reason it had the opening act. There's no curfew there.
No
they
curfew,
can play
yeah.
longer. They can do kind of whatever they want there.
Yeah.
The parking lot was certainly evidence that not only can the band do anything they want on stage, but you can do whatever you want in the parking lot, too.
Yeah, yeah. The tailgating at Dave shows is pretty legendary. Yeah,
especially at that place.
Especially at Alpine, yeah.
We got there at about 4 o'clock for a 7:30 show.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe how far back we were already parked. We were parked right inside the gates because people had been partying there for hours already.
People start real early at Dave shows because it's a full weekend. Like, if you're going to go, because he always, you know, they always come around the 4th of July.
Right.
Always. I've seen them on my birthday like 3 times over the years. That show that you're talking about took place on my birthday.
Okay.
And it's always like between the 4th and the 8th of July. That's when they they always hit Chicago or the Chicago area. But they did play Northerly Island and Alpine.
Yeah. Tinley and Alpine.
Oh, they played Tinley?
They played Tinley. Mm. I guess Dave, my buddy went to the Tinley shows and the Alpine shows, and he said Dave seemed to be not thrilled about being back in Tinley Park.
Yeah.
That he just kept, he goes, I think it was tongue-in-cheek, but Dave just kept, you know, it's great to be back in Tinley. Like, just kept saying it over and over. And they didn't do any hits. I guess the set list is, for you or I, it was probably a great set list. But for somebody who wanted to go here, what would you say in Ants Marching? It was not a great set list. And that was
Tinley
Park.
Well, you know what? I think that's pretty awesome.
Me too. That's what I saw. Here you go.
Yeah.
I got to come here. This is what you hear.
Yeah, you're not going to hear Crash.
Nope.
So you and your girlfriend are not going to hug while we play that song, which is what happens every time.
Yeah.
And that's the pee song.
The pee song. Oh, yeah, that's
when you go pee. Yeah, that's when you go pee. It's like when Crash starts. And not that I don't love that song, because I do.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, now this is where everybody's going to hold up their beer and they're going to hug their significant other and sway back and forth. Spill the beer and they'll make out. People will be furiously making out during that. That's my opportunity to go and pee. That's all. It's always, it's so funny too, because the last time I saw, I can't remember the last time I saw Dave. It was a couple of years ago. And there was an exodus when that song started. I'm not kidding. It was all guys. We're all like, yeah.
Time to.
Like all single guys going right to the can when Crash started.
Speaking of Dave Matthews and the can, tomorrow's a very important anniversary for Dave Matthews.
I'm
going to
bring
Chicago.
This up. What? Everybody has to bring this up.
I think it's kind of funny.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's. First of all, I know Dave is, you know, obviously going to be associated with that
it's
forever.
It's not his fault.
No, it's not. They hired a moron.
It's the bus driver's fault.
They hired a moron bus driver.
Yeah.
The thing about it is that what makes it so sort of aggravating and that this happened and that it continues to be brought up is that Dave is one of the most environmentally friendly bands on the planet. And they give tons of money to causes like that. And to have somebody dump a bunch of crap into the Chicago River and onto a tourist boat, to have that associated with Dave Matthews Band is insane.
It's funny though.
Yeah, I don't find it funny. I don't find it funny. But anyway,
they had a beer special, by the way, at Alpine Valley. They were calling it value beer for the Dave fans in attendance who didn't want to buy. Expensive 24-ounce cans.
What is value beer?
Value beer was Busch Light for $4.
Wow.
$4 Busch Lights at Alpine Valley.
That's a value beer.
That's like hopping in a time machine
back
to 1984.
Oh, I can't imagine how drunk the crowd was. Oh, man, because people get loaded on $10 beers at Dave shows.
Yep.
I remember going to Soldier Field. I went 2 days in a row. They played Soldier Field. I remember going to Soldier Field, and it was... Buddy Guy opened.
Oh, I remember when Buddy Guy opened.
And so we got there, and it was still sunlight, and people were falling down the stairs. They were just like, oh, they were just completely hammered. I'm like, why? Dave's not going to be on for like another 2 hours, and you already can't stand
up? Well, that's
up?
What this was like. I mean, when we pulled into that parking lot at 4 p.m., and people had clearly already been at it for hours, and there was not an employee or officer or anything to be seen. I was like, man, Alpine's a free-for-all.
People get loaded at Dave Matthews shows.
It seriously felt like 1975 in that parking lot.
Even as big a drinker as I was, I never got, you know, concerts were not a place where I got loaded. I mean, I've been drunk many, many, many times, and I was a heavy, heavy, heavy drinker. But when I'm dropping a lot of money on a concert, I want to remember it.
Right.
I'll get drunk afterwards. That's what I used to do. But people who get hammered before the first song starts, I'm like, what are you doing?
I remember seeing Dave Matthews in Tinley Park. My mom paid me to take my brother, and we were in the lawn, and somebody that was in his group of high school kids was passed out on a blanket in the lawn section during Government Mule's opening set.
There you go.
Didn't even make it to Dave.
Very memorable evening.
Mm-hmm.
All right, hang on, Jim. getting drunk at a Dave Matthews show. We could do a full 5 hours on that, but we're not going to. We're going to jump back in. We're going to get to Lollapalooza and what Jim saw there. We're also going to play a round of Music IQ. I wanna be the sledgehammer.
This will be my test.
Dave.
It was great, though.
It's fantastic.
They did a nice job of that. We got all along the Watchtower, too. So.
Oh, it's always it's always a treat to get Watchtower, man. And it's a nice 22-minute version of it.
Yep.
And it's, Tom's not a fan of Dave. Not a fan. And you got two total Dave dorks here.
Listen, I respect the band. I just don't respect Dave.
I love the man. Love them,
man. I enjoy it every year.
I do too, man. I think they're great. They're seriously some of the greatest musicians on the planet are in that band. Carter Beauford's the best drummer on the planet.
I love the way they've been able to evolve their sound kind of post Boyd Tinsley.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been good.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jim, Lollapalooza.
Yes.
You're still recovering.
As I put it every year, Nick, I go so you don't have to.
Exactly. Thank you very much. What were some of the highlights for you?
Janelle Monáe. That was my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite performance of the weekend. Childish Gambino was fantastic, but Janelle Monáe was my favorite of the weekend.
Yeah. She's great.
She's amazing. She's another one who just does everything. I mean, there was elements of Janet Jackson in her dancing. There was elements of Prince in her guitar playing. Her band is just unbelievable and reminds me of, like, you know, they channeled James Brown up there. And then there's her, who's a great singer and songwriter. Her new album that's out, Dirty Computer, which is terrific, which really pushes pop music to me in a weird, really good direction. Mm-hmm. She collaborated with Brian Wilson on it, with Stevie Wonder. And then it came out after the fact that Prince had worked all over it right before he passed away.
Holy cow.
So her new album is unbelievable. And
she's also a pretty impressive actress.
Yes.
You know?
She can do everything.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. So Childish Gambino, speaking of actors.
He's another one. Like, I had no idea he... I mean, I know the music and I enjoy, you know, Redbone is fantastic, but I had no idea he was able to... that he was quite the performer he is musically. That band is so incredibly well rehearsed with him. I mean, he spent more time off the stage in the crowd than he did on it, and he's halfway out from the stage, you know, into the crowd, stopping the band on a dime with, you know, without even looking at him, just throwing up a hand gesture. Wow. Or whatever, and they're stopping, and he's got them, you know, changing tempo, and, you know, he's calling out all of his changes from halfway back in the crowd. I'm like, this is not a polished rehearsed set. They are operating in the moment. Like, it was in lockstep.
He's an extraordinarily talented guy.
He had a full choir up there, a full band. I mean, it was dynamite.
And I love Childish Gambino, but, you know, he's just so unbelievably multi-talented.
Can you imagine being that good at that many different things?
It's crazy.
Acting, comedy,
it's
writing,
crazy.
Singing,
directing,
music, and like everything.
Mean, Atlanta just got renewed for a fourth season. Yes.
God.
And best show on TV.
I'm jealous of someone like that.
He's ridiculous, man. And I remember, look, he's funny on Community.
Right.
Oh, that's great. And then, like, wait a minute, what?
Little did we know, like, we were totally, like, just barely scratching the surface.
Yeah, no, he's an extraordinarily talented guy.
Yeah, he's probably, of all the headliners, he certainly stole the show. Your headliners Thursday were the Strokes and the Chainsmokers. I didn't go see the Chainsmokers, but the Strokes were wonderful.
Yeah.
I had never seen them before. I've seen members of the Strokes solo.
Yeah.
And I've heard they can be hit or miss live. They were very much hit on Thursday.
I've never seen them.
Yeah, neither have I until this. And they were great. I think Albert Hammond Jr., the guitar player, he's rhythm guitar player in the Strokes, but he's come into his own kind of over the course of four solo albums now. And he's, you know, the Strokes are very much garage rock.
Yeah.
That look down at the stage while you're playing. There's really not a lot. They're not a compelling, you know,
right,
presence on stage.
Right.
And Albert Hammond Jr. has kind of become the one guy in that band you watch and go, oh, look at, he's doing things up there. He's moving around. But they were great. Didn't see the Chainsmokers. Friday was Childish Gambino. He was unbelievable. Saturday, your headliner was 21 Pilots.
Mm-hmm.
I got out of there early to go see the Revivalists at the Vic Theater.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the Revivalists?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, they're an 8-piece group out of New Orleans, horn section, two drummers. As a Dave fan, I think they'd be right up your alley.
Yeah.
They just opened for the Stones in Florida, and they were wonderful at Lollapalooza.
Oh, cool.
Performed Sunday in front of an end gun violence backdrop. Mm. There were a couple artists on Sunday who were pretty vocal about that.
Yeah.
Casey Musgraves being the other one.
She's unbelievable.
Yeah, and she was terrific, too. Like, she's another one who's really kind of, you know, pushing, you know.
I think she's great.
She's kind of pushed out of that country mold and is headed more toward pop, but...
Oh, I think she's great.
In a really great way.
I think she's great. Yeah. Okay, hang on, Jim. All right, Jim is with us. Jim Ryan. We'll find out more about Lollapalooza, some other stuff. We're also going to play a round of Music IQ. That's all coming up after the news, which is coming up right after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to be talking about some of the best TV show catchphrases. We've got superfans who went too far and another edition of Know Your Onion. That's all coming up. Right now, though, we're talking with Jim Ryan. You can read his stuff at Forbes.com. Follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. And we're talking music, Lollapalooza, and we're going to play a little bit of Music IQ.
Yes,
as we do every time Jim comes in. What other things do you want to talk about covering the Lollapalooza show?
Sunday, one of my favorite artists of the weekend, selfishly, is one of my favorite guitarists ever, and that would be Slash from Guns N' Roses.
Oh,
Slash,
sure,
was performing Sunday, and he was fantastic. Did 1 hour. We heard Gary Clark Jr. there coming back from the break, and he was pretty great on Saturday.
Yeah.
Closed with a cover of Come Together. So Gary Clark Jr. covering some Beatles.
That's pretty cool.
That was pretty good. One of the funniest things I saw all weekend, as you've got two main stages, one on the north end of the park, one on the south end. The south one is down by like Roosevelt. The one on the north end is up almost near Monroe. So it's very difficult to catch. You kind of have to pick one or the other. It's
right.
Difficult to catch parts of both of them. So if you see a gigantic, ridiculous, unbelievably large crowd on one end of the park, it means that someone else is performing to almost nobody.
Yeah.
On the other end. Case in point was Saturday. The biggest crowd I saw of the entire weekend, bigger than the crowd I saw at Childish Gambino Friday, and this wasn't even a headliner. This was at like 6 o'clock in the afternoon, was Lil Wayne.
Really?
The crowd for Lil Wayne was unbelievable on Saturday. And somebody had said it to me in the media tent earlier in the day. They're like, why is Lil Wayne not headlining? I was like, Lil Wayne really is a headliner? Then I got there at 6 o'clock and saw you couldn't even get into the softball pits on the south end. It was that crazy.
Wow.
So I headed north to catch the opposite of that, which was Tenacious D performing to almost nobody.
Well, that makes me
sad. It was
a
very small crowd.
That makes me sad. I love Tenacious D.
Lollapalooza.
How were they?
They were okay.
Yeah.
It was one of those things, too. I'm like, those songs came out pre-Me Too. I'm like, can they play some of these songs anymore? How do they deliver these songs in 2019?
And, yeah.
You know, the one in particular.
Yeah, yeah.
They closed with that one.
Of course they
gently,
did.
Gently. So.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, so they still did it. That was entertaining. And then Perry Farrell closed everything out on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The Kind Heaven Orchestra. He had about 15 people on stage with him, which he did a couple Jane's Addiction songs. I heard him do Stop. He did some Porno for Pyro stuff. He did Pets. Do they require 15 people to pull those off? The answer's no. And if there were 15 people on stage, there were 50 people watching it. There was nobody watching it.
One of the weirdest shows I've ever gone to was Porno for Pyros.
Okay. Where was this at, by the way?
The Riv.
Okay.
And it was just weird. I mean, he had clowns on stage, and during one of the songs, the clown was like cutting his face, looking in a mirror and cutting his face with a razor blade and laughing. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
Oh, my God.
And he didn't play any Jane's Addiction.
Okay.
It was just all Porno for Pyros.
Well, I'm not kidding. There were about 15 people on stage and 60 to 80 people watching it.
Yeah. There were a bunch of people on stage for the Porno for Pyros thing, too. And they were all, like, in weird costumes, and they were all just being weird.
These were all players. He had a horn section and a lot of percussion. It seemed a little unnecessary, but he has a new album out, so check that out.
Okay. All right. So, overall, how was Lolla this year for you?
You know, not bad. It was nice to see. My thing with Lollapalooza is that ever since it's gone to 4 days, I feel like the schedule's been a little bit watered down as a result. You know, the last time it was 3 days, you had headliners like, I think it was Metallica and Paul McCartney.
Right.
And now you have 21 Pilots and It's nothing against 21 Pilots, but I think there's a little bit of difference there in the quality of the act.
Yeah.
And I think as far as earlier in the day, you're less liable to see something, you know, dynamite than you were when it was 3 days. So that's my only thing on it. The biggest special guest of the weekend, by the way, was Death Cab for Cutie brought out Chance the Rapper.
Oh, okay.
Ben Gibbard is on the new Chance the Rapper album, so there's the connection there. But Lala was good. It's always fun. I always see music I probably wouldn't pop up on my radar elsewhere.
Right.
And I think at the end of the day, that's a good thing.
Okay. All right. A caller texted in, did Jim C. Slightly Stupid at Northerly Island?
I did not.
Ah.
No, I did not. Okay. I saw them a couple years ago open for 311, though, at Northerly Island.
Okay. So, all right. Are we ready to play a little music IQ?
Sure.
We do this every time Jim is here. Let's start with the red questions.
Okay.
The red side of the card. We'll each ask some questions to one another. Jim, you ask Tom, right?
Yeah, that'll work.
Tom asks me, and I ask you.
There you go.
So we'll start it off. Are you ready?
I am.
All right. Come on, man. All right. Superstition, Sir Duke, Higher Ground, You Are the Sunshine of My Life are all hit songs from this 22-time Grammy Award winner.
Travis Tritt.
Who is it? Is it Stevie Wonder, Frank Sinatra, or Ray Charles?
That would be Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Al Jorgensen.
Al Jorgensen. All right.
He's good.
All right.
Tom, here we go. Which artist released the album OG Original Gangster, considered to be a cornerstone album of the gangster rap genre? Would that be Ice Cube, T-Pain, or Ice-T?
I'm going to say Ice-T.
That is correct.
Okay.
Released in 1991.
I was kind of nervous for a second.
Really?
Yeah, well, I'm not as well versed in that world.
You also weren't born yet when that record came out.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly. Ask me about Britney Spears.
Okay.
All right, Nick. Where is the Eurovision contest held each year? Is it Stockholm, Helsinki, or in the winning country from the previous edition?
Yeah, Nick.
How come I didn't get an OG question? Stockholm.
That is incorrect. It is held in the winning country from the previous edition.
Oh, man.
You're not watching Eurovision every year?
Yeah, I don't watch Eurovision every year. All right, after the first question, one for Tom, one for Jim, zero for your host. All right, are you ready?
Yes.
What is considered to be the signature song of, R&B artist Aretha Franklin? Is that It's Raining Men... It's Raining Men, At Last, or Respect?
Let's go with Respect.
You think?
I think.
Considering that the other two aren't by Aretha Franklin. All right. It's Raining Men. You guys know who wrote It's Raining Men, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Paul Schaefer.
There you go.
Yeah. You gotta love that. Okay.
Tom, going back to more rap here, who was the first rap artist to receive an Oscar? Was it Grandmaster Flash? Was it Jay-Z? Or was it Eminem?
Huh. And it was Eminem.
That is correct. Yeah. Won the Oscar for Best Song in 2002 with the soundtrack of his autobiographical film, 8 Mile.
That's right. Lose Yourself.
I can never get... I always think it would be Juicy J for Hustle and Flow.
Yeah.
All right.
My favorite ever. Jon Stewart was the host that year. And after they, what the hell is the name of the mafia? What the hell is the name?
Three Six Mafia.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell the name is. 3-6 Mafia. He comes out after they win the Academy Award. They win the Academy Award. He comes out and he goes, 3-6 Mafia, 1, Martin Scorsese, 0. I still remember that to this day.
I love Jon Stewart.
Like, he's the best. And it's 3-6 Mafia.
Yeah.
Won an Oscar before Martin Scorsese did.
Maybe he should have written It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp.
Oh, God. All right.
Okay. Nick, I think this is a slightly out-of-date question or a poorly worded one, so I feel like
And of course I get it.
So bear with us.
So all I'm going to say is I think I'd be willing to accept two answers.
Oh, okay.
Why did Alan Thicke's son hit song Blurred Lines cause significant controversy? It contained plagiarized material. Its lyrics and video clip bothered women, or its video clip had been financed by a famous cigarette brand.
It's the first one, the plagiarized material.
Now, here's why I think this is a poorly worded question.
I can already see this round's going to be under protest. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the answer on the card is its lyrics and video clip bothered women, well, which is also true.
Right.
So I don't know.
Well, if it's...
Do we have a commissioner?
If we... Yeah, commissioner.
Yeah.
If it's not that way on the card, then I got it wrong.
All right, you got it wrong.
Okay.
Man. Sorry.
All right. All right. You ready?
I am.
Come on, man.
He's just getting gimmies.
Who is Paul Hewson? Flea, the bassist of Red Hot Chili Peppers, Sting, or Bono, the lead singer of U2?
Bonovox.
That's right.
All right.
God's name. I'm getting questions about blurred lines.
In Eurovision. Going back to the hip-hop well once more, Tom. Are you ready?
Yeah, hit me.
To hip-hop fans, what were the 1990s? The Glorious Ten, the Immortals, or the Golden Age? I've never heard it referred to as this.
I'm going to say the Glorious Ten?
I'm sorry. The correct answer is the Golden Age. Here's the factoid on the card. It says the 90s were a time of wealth, diversity, quality, innovation, and influence when it came to hip-hop culture.
Yeah, and that's right around the time I stepped out. I stopped listening to hip-hop right around the time The Chronic came out.
Okay.
That was when I was like... Okay.
Not a big fan of The Chronic?
No. There's a few hip-hop stuff that came out after The Chronic that I like, but before that, like in the 80s and the early to mid-90s, I was all about hip-hop.
What is it about The Chronic that turns you off?
I don't know. It all sounds the same now.
Okay.
I don't think Dre's all that great. I like Snoop more as a personality than as a rapper.
Okay.
But everything sounds like The Chronic. Everything at that point, after The Chronic came out, everything sounded like The Chronic, and it was all featuring this person and featuring that person and featuring this person. Just shut up, and I'll put on Fear of a Black Planet by P.E., and I'm happy.
Well, Public Enemy is amazing.
Well, they're the best. That. Okay, what's next?
All right, Nick.
Yeah.
Rapper Drake was born and raised in which country? Is it
finally okay?
Puerto Rico, the USA, or Canada?
He is a Canadian person.
That he is, yes. and a Raptors fan.
Yes, he
big
is.
Time, yeah. Big time. They had to calm him down on the side. They're like, "Hey, calm down on the side there."
He was a little rambunctious,
jumping out onto the court and everything, running around like a lunatic. Is he a Leafs fan?
I don't think he was.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Where's he from in Canada? Maybe he's an Oilers fan. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I believe he's from Toronto.
He should be a Leafs fan then, right?
I don't know if he's a hockey fan.
What? You legally can't be Canadian and not like hockey. They will kick you out of the country.
Yeah.
All right. You ready?
I am.
Here's what we got. You guys both have three, and I have one. All right, when it comes to playing the guitar, what is Paco de Lucía known for? Her tremolos? Oh, wait, his tremolos, his aggressions, or his fast finger work?
Let me go with the tremolos.
It's the finger work.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
Ouch.
You'd be the... The light of the party with that little fact. Yeah. All right, next.
All right, Tom, in inches, what is the diameter of a 45 RPM vinyl record? Is it 6.5 inches, 10 inches, or 7 inches?
The answer is 10 inches.
And just go ahead and grab this clip right now, Tom.
Yeah.
The correct answer is 7 inches.
Oh, no.
The recording track is 6.5 inches wide. Vinyl sales have made a significant comeback since 2006.
All right.
And that'll be on Straight Out of Context when?
For Friday.
Yeah, this Friday.
Okay.
Yeah,
perfect.
This
Friday.
All right. Let's get our last question here in round one.
Okay.
Which famous musical artist played his last concert at the Montreux Jazz Festival in 1991 before going to the big stage in the sky? Was that...
Did you ad-lib that, or is that on the card?
It's on the card, okay. Man. Kurt Cobain, Freddie Mercury, or Miles Davis?
What was the beginning of the question again?
Which famous musical artist played his last concert at the Montreux Jazz Festival
in 19... I'm going Miles Davis.
Yeah, what? Okay. I mean, why would... First of all, Kurt Cobain... Cobain died in 94. Freddie Mercury did die.
So Kurt wasn't solo at a jazz festival?
No. No, he wasn't.
Just checking.
Ridiculous. Okay. All right.
Tom, how many people have gathered at the Woodstock Festival in 1969? Was it over a million? Was it roughly half a million? Or was it roughly 200,000?
Oh, jeez.
Could call Pettengill.
Yeah, I wish I could. I'm going to say roughly half a million.
That is correct.
Wow. Very
roughly
nice.
Half a million.
Okay.
How many will be at Woodstock 50?
Zero.
Yep. Okay. Last question before we break.
All right, last one here. The song New York, I Love You, But You're Bringing Me Down is by whom? Is it Jay-Z, the Beastie Boys, or LCD Sound System?
I'm going to say LCD Sound System.
That is correct.
All right.
Yeah.
One of my favorite bands of all time.
Okay. All right, at the end of the first round, Tom has 4, Jim has 4, I have 2.
It's going to take a big final round, Nick.
It's going to take a big final round, which we'll do after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. We are back. And it's the 30th anniversary, right?
That's crazy.
30th anniversary of Do the Right Thing, 30th anniversary of Fear of the Black Planet.
Yep.
I'm doing them. Wow. Jeez.
Or no, not Fear of the Black Planet came out in 90, but
Nation of Millions?
That was 88. But the single Fight the Power came out in 89, but it ended up on the album Fear of the Black Planet.
Wow.
So, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. We're back for round two. We'll try to get it in before 3 o'clock. If not, then we'll just wrap it up afterwards. Tom has 4, Jim has 4, and I have 2. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Here's our next question. Jim Ryan is here, and we're playing a little music ID. Where did Lisa Left Eye Lopez get the TLC of TLC? Get her nickname. After getting into a fight in high school, her left eye was black and blue. Her boyfriend noticed that her left eye was bigger than her right, or as a child, she wore a patch on her left eye.
There's an Andre Rison joke in there, but I'm making it. I'm going to go with the patch.
It is no.
Really?
Her boyfriend noticed that her left eye was bigger than her right.
Okay.
Yeah. And then she burned his house down. Okay.
Dope. Hashtag Andre Rison.
Exactly. Okay, next, Jim, go ahead.
All right, Tom, which of Michael Jackson's pets was named Crusher? Was it his elephant, his python, or his chihuahua? Crusher.
I feel like Michael Jackson probably had a pretty good sense of irony, so I'm going to say the chihuahua.
I'm sorry, the correct answer is python.
Python.
He had a python named Crusher alongside his monkey Bubbles, his llama Lewis, and his rat Ben.
Of course, his rat was named Ben.
Have you seen the Eddie Murphy Comedians in Cars where he tells a story about Bubbles?
No, I've not seen it.
He tells a story about Bubbles. You should really watch it.
No, I will. I love that show, and I just haven't seen that one. Okay.
All right, Nick. Yeah. Which Elvis Costello song served as inspiration for a book title? Is it The Angels Want to Wear My Red Shoes, Man Out of Time, or Less Than Zero?
Man Out of Time?
That is incorrect.
Less than zero.
Less Than Zero by Brett Easton Ellis, your favorite.
Which was turned into a really crappy movie.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. Who said, we're not arrogant, we just believe we're the best band in the world?
Oasis. No.
Well, Paul McCartney, The Beatles, Bono, U2, or Noel Gallagher, Oasis?
I'm going Noel Gallagher.
You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Of course it's that. Of course it is.
He's in town next week.
Good for him. All right. All right, Jim, go ahead.
All right, Tom, in what big German city did the Beatles play for almost 2 years before becoming famous? Was it Munich, Hamburg, or Berlin?
I'm going to say Hamburg.
It is Hamburg. They played the Indra Club in August of 60.
There you go. All right, what's next here?
All right, next is who sang Take My Hand, Precious Lord during the funeral of Martin Luther King? Was it Aretha Franklin, Ella Fitzgerald, or Mahalia Jackson?
Mahalia Jackson.
That is correct.
That was going to be my guess. Nicely done, Nick.
All right. All right, Jim, you ready?
Yes.
Which Huey Lewis hit was featured on the soundtrack of Back to the Future? Was it Do You Believe in Love, The Power of Love, or Doing It All for My Baby?
The Power of Love.
Exactly right.
Doing It All for My Baby.
Doing It All for My Baby. You got to love Huey, man. All right.
Tom, in which film should we have been able to hear Pink Floyd's song Atom, Heart, Mother, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Apocalypse Now, or A Clockwork Orange?
Ah, jeez.
Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd. What were the three choices again?
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Apocalypse Now, and A Clockwork Orange.
I'm going to say Clockwork Orange.
That is correct.
Oh, okay. Good stuff.
Nicely done.
All right.
All right. Nick, which British comic book artist founded the virtual band Gorillaz in 1998?
I'm not going to know this.
Is it James Jarvis, Frank Miller, or Jamie Hewlett?
I don't know this one either.
James Jarvis.
That's incorrect. It was Jamie Hewlett.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Not a big Gorillaz fan.
You're not getting the big round you needed, Nick.
six. You guys are both tied at six. I have three.
Okay.
Here we go. Which classical composer penned the melody used in the Beach Boys song Lady Linda? Would that be Johann Sebastian Bach, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, or Ludwig van Beethoven?
Bach.
That's exactly right.
Lucky guess.
A lucky guess is right. All right, go ahead, Jim.
Tom, which artist worked as a typist for his father for $40 a week before launching his solo career? Was it Tom Waits, Marvin Gaye, or Lou Reed?
I'm going to say Tom Waits.
It is not Tom Waits. It's Lou Reed. It's said that his parents administered electroshock therapy to fight off some tendencies of his, hence the origins. Wow, this keeps going. Never mind.
Okay. All right. All right.
Okay. Who is behind the band Rocket Juice and the Moon?
Oh, I know this.
Is it Tom York, Jarvis Cocker, or Damon Albarn?
Tom York?
That is incorrect. It was Damon Albarn from Blur.
Okay. I wouldn't
have gotten Gorillaz.
That. With Erykah Badu and Flea. It's awesome.
Steve Reich, Lamonte Young, Terry Riley, and Philip Glass are often called pioneers of what musical genre from the 60s? Would that be modernism, minimal music, or soft rock?
minimal music.
That's exactly right.
Soft rock. Okay. Yacht rock.
Okay. All right. Now, by the way, Jim won. You can't win.
Yeah.
Oh,
great.
We still want to finish it off real quick before we get to the news.
Tom, the final question. Which band's first major success spurred when an Australian radio station broadcasted a copied version of their song? Was it London Grammar, Half Moon Run, or Mighty Oaks?
Mighty Oaks.
Sorry, the correct answer is London Grammar.
Ah.
Okay.
And then, Nick,
this is it.
Who bought the rights to the legendary TV show Soul Train after 35 years of broadcast, ending in 2006? Was it Quincy Jones, Pharrell Williams, or Irvin Magic Johnson?
Please tell me it's not Magic.
Pharrell Williams.
Nah, it's Magic.
Oh, of course it is. Okay. Of course it is.
Soul Train. Jim, thanks for coming down, man.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you soon. Have fun. And everybody can check out, you got Radio Jim Ryan. You can follow it on Twitter, and you can go to Forbes.com and
that's
read
correct.
Your stuff.
Yep.
Okay, cool. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, there you go. Jim Ryan, and the news is up in a couple of minutes. Right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're about to jump into a fun topic here. You know, there are a lot of catchphrases that pop out during TV shows, and we're talking about some of the more memorable TV show catchphrases. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Coming up in a little bit. After the 4:30 news, we're going to jump into Know Your Onion, another round of that. So we have two contestants. We'll have two callers call in. The first two callers will play separately. They will each have a round of their own. And the idea is that Tom will read you a news headline, and you have to decide whether it is real or whether it is from The Onion. The Onion is the comedy satirical newspaper. And the real news is so weird now, it's very hard to tell what's real and what's from The Onion. So that's your job. Is to get the majority of the five news headlines correct, real or onion. That's coming up. Know Your Onion. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. What was that on your Wild Card Wednesday request?
That was Dog a Donut by Cat Stevens, coming to us from the 773.
That was Cat Stevens?
That was Cat Stevens.
Wow.
Getting weird.
Yeah, that's a little weird. Wild Card Wednesday year! All right. Okay. So catchphrases, you know, every TV show. I love when they try to, you know, when TV shows or whatever, they try to force a catchphrase. Like, we're going to get people, this is going to be printed on a T-shirt, I promise. Sometimes that doesn't work.
That's one of my favorite bits in BoJack.
Yeah.
Because I forget, what is it that the brother says? I can't remember. It's something really dumb.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, it's such a funny bit.
There are many things that make a TV show memorable. By the way, this entire article is up on our Facebook page, which is a great way to stay connected. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us right now, check it out. You can read the entire article. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. There are many things that make a TV show memorable. Some shows have iconic characters. Others have theme songs that get stuck in your head for years. And then there are the shows that spawn memorable catchphrases. Many shows over the years have featured characters who have become famous for one thing that they always said, and those phrases have often entered the lexicon. Here are some of the most famous TV catchphrases from the airwaves over the years. We want to hear from you guys. What are some of your favorites, or maybe some of the most annoying ones? Because I know that there are a few. 312-981-7200. Here's the first one they mentioned. Dynamite! famous catchphrase right there. When Good Times started, it was a somewhat serious show about an inner-city black family trying to make it while dealing with racial bias in America. Then the character of J.J. Walker dropped one word with gusto, and the entire world of the show was turned on its head. The first thing people remember from Good Times is J.J. exclaiming, "Dynamite!" For a lot of people, it's the only thing that they remember, and that's the power of the catchphrase. Yeah, that's it's really funny. John Amos, who played the father on Good Times, who's a tremendous actor, who I love, and I love him in everything, but I love him in Die Hard 2. He's fantastic in Die Hard 2. When he does that heel turn halfway through, when you realize he's a bad guy, oh man. Anyway, John Amos, they were doing like a, I can't remember, it was some sort of anniversary special. I think it was a, a big anniversary special just about Norman Lear. It was like his birthday or something. I think it was like maybe it was like his 80th or his 90th birthday. They did a television special where they did a retrospective on all the stuff that Norman Lear was responsible for, which of course was groundbreaking and amazing, incredible television. And so, John Amos tells this story about how he got really frustrated with what happened to the show. Like they said here in the article, that it was a somewhat serious show about an inner city black family trying to make ends meet. That's what the show was originally about, and they were going to take on the social issues and about a lower income, you know, lower middle class African American family, you know. Dealing with living in the projects and all that stuff, and the hardworking, you know, father. And so when the show did start to become cartoony and veer away from, you know, the more serious subjects, and as, you know, Jimmy Walker turned out to be sort of the reason the show existed, where it was just nothing but dynamite and him, you know, being goofy and mugging and wearing goofy shirts and hats and stuff. John Amos was understandably disappointed and upset that the show had veered away from what it was supposed to be about. And so he called up Norman Lear. Or he complained to Norman Lear, and he said to Norman Lear, he's like, what happened to this? What happened to what this show was supposed to be about? Why is it about this skinny kid screaming dynamite now? That's all it is. It's not, you know, it's just a really goofy, stupid show now. And so he complained to Norman Lear, and then like a couple of days later, Norman Lear called John Amos back and said, well, you don't have to worry about it anymore. Since you don't like the direction the show is going in, we're going to let you go. And they killed off the character because he complained about dynamite. And he was right, though, because the show got really, you know, goofy and over the top. And it was all pretty much about JJ screaming and being goofy. So, yeah, there it is. Dynamite. Here is Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, what's happening?
Hey,
you know, the key to the catchphrase is using it in a situation where it really applies. And over the years, my brother, who's a lot more successful than me, has used the phrase from A-Team, George Peppard. I love it when a plan comes together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I never really watched the A-Team, but I do remember that.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. There's a couple that I like, but I got to do them in character. Maxwell Smart, missed it by that much.
Yeah, that's a classic.
And Barney Fife, nip it in the bud.
Yep. Nip it in the bud. Nip it. He does that quite a lot.
All right,
too.
I hope we get to hear your famous Steve Urkel impression.
Okay, Doc, take care.
All right, thanks, man.
There you go. Here's Patrick on WGN. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, how you doing next?
All right, what's up?
Hey.
Hey, well, there you go. We were talking about what's happening yesterday on the show, yesterday morning.
What you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, that's a classic. What you talking about, Willis, which is, of course, from Different Strokes.
And then you got Fonz.
Hey, you got the Fonz, that's right. Those are all classics.
Okay,
yeah.
And Lenny and Squiggy. Oh, what was their favorite there?
Well, I mean, they would just...
When they came into the room.
They would just go, hello! It would just be hello.
There you go.
Yeah.
It was Lenny, though.
Yeah.
Okay?
All right.
Not Squiggy.
Thanks, Patrick.
Love the brother.
Take care, buddy. See ya. There you go. So what they say here, what you talking about, Willis, which just was they had to at some point force it into every single episode, whether the situation called for it or not, which is the case of like almost all of these. What you talking about, Willis, says apparently Different Strokes loved its apostrophes, not just in its name, but in the iconic catchphrase, because what you talking about? Many of us never saw the show. Even so, we were all at least familiar with Gary Coleman's catchphrase, which he delivered to his brother Willis, played by Todd Bridges. It overtook the show in a way that overtook Coleman's life. Uh, 708 area code says, to the moon, Alice, from the Honeymooners. See, that's paraphrasing. He would say stuff like, you want to go to the moon? Alice, you want to go to the moon? But the actual catchphrase is bang, zoom. That's the catchphrase.
Was he also pal right in the kisser? Was that the Honeymooners?
No.
Never mind.
No. It was bang, zoom.
Yeah.
And baby, you're the greatest. Because almost every episode of the Honeymooners, which is my favorite television show of all time. Truly. The original 39 episodes, I've seen them all multiple times. I know them all by heart, and they still make me laugh. But no, it was just like he would go bang, zoom, and that was the whole like to the moon thing. He would every once in a while go, "You want to go to the moon? I'll send you to the moon, Alice." That kind of thing. But there was also, "Baby, you're the greatest," because like every episode of the Honeymooners was essentially the same. Ralph would have some harebrained scheme. It would go poorly. Alice would be upset, and he apologizes at the end. That's kind of what it is, and it's brilliant every single time. It's simple. It's brilliant every single time. And then you have his chemistry with Ed Norton. You know, the relationship between Ralph and Ed is fantastic. And Audrey Meadows is one of the greatest comedic actresses ever and was so great in that show. But, yeah, he would always apologize, and then she would forgive him. Inevitably, Alice would always forgive Ralph at the end of the show. And then he'd go, baby. Yeah, the greatest. And then they would kiss, the music would fade out, and the music would rise.
Mm.
You ever watch The Honeymooners?
Yeah. I mean, I would catch it on TV Land when they would do some reruns here and there. I got to say, though, and obviously this is, you know, modernized looking back on it. I was, even as a kid, a little bit confused by the fact that he was threatening to, like, hit his wife.
Well, I mean, people who complain about that, you know, I think it's ridiculous to complain about that because
right.
The show is so, and the show is so, you know, that all of those moments are so completely over the top and not serious.
Yeah.
And also the relationship between Ralph and Alice is set up It's one of the best marriage relationships ever shown on TV.
Yeah, and I'm again, it was just a thing that I didn't understand at the time. But even in my own house, my dad would say things like, "You know, I'm going to tan your hide, or I'm going to give you a thick ear." My favorite was like, "Would you like to hear the sound of one hand clapping?"
Yeah,
and he never did it. He never meant it. But I guess I didn't get it as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's just absurd. You know,
I mean, we're talking about a show, as you said, completely built around ridiculous harebrained schemes.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you can't really take it that seriously.
We got a break here. And when we come back, we've got more of the most memorable TV show catchphrases. We got a bunch of texts coming in. And if you guys want to call us or text us, it's 312-981-7200. Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. What the hell was that?
It was the intro to Rat Patrol.
Oh, Rat Patrol.
Yeah, I feel bad. I had a tough time trying to find the right one because, you know, there's a million different, you know, versions of everything on the internet.
All right. Well, who requested that?
That's from Paul in Maryland.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah! That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 4:30 news, we'll get two of you guys on the line, and each of you will play a round of Know Your Onion. Right now, though, we are talking about TV's most memorable catchphrases. We got some texts coming in. Bob in Indiana also says nip it in the bud for Barney Fife. 847 area code says sit on it from Happy Days. Happy Days has a lot of them. Because we mentioned A for the Fonz, you got Sit on It. Then you've got Richie Cunningham, Found My Thrill on Blueberry Hill. He would sing that all the time. There were a bunch of catchphrases on Happy Days. 630 area code says, Urkel, did I do that? Next in the article here, and you can see, you can see the whole article on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. Doh is the next one. We could do an article just on the catchphrases from The Simpsons. Yeah, there's a lot of catchphrases on The Simpsons. I remember when the show first came on and sort of captured the imagination of the nation, it was really focused on Bart. Like, they were really like, you know, cowabunga, eat my shorts, all those, you know, catchphrases. They were really selling Bart. And then as the show continued, it became more about the family, and then Homer became the main character. Now, there have been dozens. However, if we're holding ourselves to only one, we have to go with Doh. After all, Homer's iconic annoyed grunt even made it to the dictionary. It is. It's in the dictionary.
Wait, Doh is in the...
D. Geez,
wow.
D apostrophe O-H. Doh. And that was something that Dan Castellaneta just came up with. I think it said... In the script, the original script, it said like angry grunt or something like that, and then he just came up with Doh. How about Bazinga?
Boo.
That's from Big Bang Theory, which is a show that I cannot understand the success of. I don't think it's funny at all. The Big Bang Theory seems primed to go down in the books as the last highly watched long-running multicam sitcom, like in the days of yore. It was a throwback right down to the wacky character spouting a catchphrase. Sheldon Cooper would often punctuate moments by saying, Bazinga! It didn't mean anything, but it caught on, to be sure. Yeah, that show, man, I don't...
I've never been a fan of Chuck Lorre.
No. No. Yeah, like Two and a Half Men's not a good show.
My dad watched that religiously.
Two and a Half Men?
Yeah, I have no idea why. He was just really into it.
A lot of babes on that show, though.
I mean, that's a whole nother...
Well, that's one of the reasons why that show's been on, that was on for such a long time. There were a lot of very attractive ladies walking through that house on a regular basis in every episode.
Very true. Really pushing Charlie Sheen as a sex idol.
Yeah, and then Ashton Kutcher. That's on
Kelso.
That's on in here. That's on in the studio too.
Yeah,
because that's part of that block. They show. Speaking of Chuck Lorre, they show Mom, which is not a terrible show.
Well, and I love Allison Janney
and Anna Faris.
She's good.
Jamie Presley is a regular on that show too, and I love her. You know what she was great on?
Jamie Presley. Wow.
Jamie Presley's on Mom.
Yeah.
You know what she was great on?
My Name Is Earl.
Unbelievable.
She was next level.
I mean, I love her. I think she's fantastic.
And she was so good in that show, specifically.
Yeah. Everybody was good on that show. That show was hilarious. So, all right, let's take a break here, and we got the news coming up, and then we'll get back to what are your favorite, the most memorable TV show catchphrases? 312-981-7200.
You'll take the high road, and I'll take the low. I'll be in Scotland before ye. For me and my true love will never meet again by the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond.
You request this?
I did not.
Wild Card Wednesday, everybody. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Who requested that?
So that was from Big Ed.
And who is singing that?
So that was the version by the Corries, very famous Scottish band.
Okay. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Coming up after the 4:30 news, yes, know your onion. You have to know the difference between real news headlines and fake onion news headlines. It gets a little tougher and tougher every day because things are weird in this world. But we will play Know Your Onion. We'll get two callers in, line them up. Each will do a round, and you won't go home empty-handed. That's for sure. So Know Your Onion coming up in a little bit. But right now, we are having some fun talking about some classic and memorable TV show catchphrases. You know, we were talking about Doe, and of course Dynamite, and Bazinga. And any of the other ones that you guys can think of, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Yeah. Yeah. So we got a whole bunch of texts coming in. And if you want to say, you want to jump in, we would love to hear from you. How about this one? This is a good one. Oh, look at that. We got some texts coming in. 630 area code. Ralph did say Powell right in the kisser. One of these days, Alice, Powell right in the kisser. So what's his name in the back was right. So that's what you are? You're what's his name in the back?
Yeah. Oh, what's his name?
What's his name in the back? First of all, he's in front of me.
Yeah.
His name is Tom. He would say Powell right in the kisser. Yeah, he did every once in a while.
The catchphrase.
No, but not as much as Bang Zoom.
Bang Zoom was the
main one. Oh, here's a good one. Here's a good one. 847 area code, kiss my grits.
I use that constantly. Constantly.
That's Flo from Alice. I just watched an episode of Alice.
It's great.
Not too long ago. I used to love that show because it was on the same night as Kaz. And they were married. Linda Lavin and Ron Liebman were married, and they like owned CBS on Sunday nights. Because Alice would be on, and it would be followed by Kaz. So you would get the married couple, Linda Lavin and the great Ron Liebman, dominating CBS programming every Sunday night. There's Kaz. The best.
I just find it hilarious that like it nothing of it survives.
No, you can't get it anywhere. Yeah. I think it was on for two seasons. It's just ridiculous how much, but it's so funny because my friend Scott and I are obsessed with Kaz. And Ron Liebman has won a Tony. He won a Tony for playing Roy Cohn in Angels in America. Like he's a legit badass actor. He's been in a lot of great movies, has given tremendous performances, and the one thing that I love him the most for is Kaz.
I'm not going to lie to you, Nick. You got a screw loose. I don't know.
Kaz, man. He played Kaczynski. He was a criminal. He went to jail. He studied law. He got out of jail. Was a lawyer. It was the best.
And he would, like, demonstrate.
Yeah, he would, like, you know what? There's no way that this guy could have hotwired the car in this amount of time. Let's go outside, Judge, out to the parking lot, and I'll show you how to hotwire a car because I'm Kaz.
A great premise for a show.
You know, I have a listener sent me an 8x10 of Kaz. It's on the wall. In the
Oh, you're kidding me.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
Well, I'm sure I've gone past it.
It's in the office. It's right above the frog. Right above my magnolia frog that Deanna got me. There's an I have an actual this is a listener, Diana, who's just she's fantastic. She's very generous and awesome. She actually sent me a real prop frog that was used in the movie Magnolia, and it's on the desk. But yeah, man, Kaz. Yeah. It was such a great show. Yeah, Kiss My Grits. Good old Flo from Alice. Yeah, I watched Alice. I hadn't watched it in a really long time. And Alice was getting like a heavy breather phone call. Like she was getting phone calls and she was scared because like somebody was calling up and breathing heavy into the phone. And it was a mid series episode because the kid wasn't as young as he was when they first moved in. My dad used to like Mel. Vic Tayback. My dad loved Vic Tayback. Sergeant Schultz, I Know Nothing from Hogan's Heroes. Classic. 804 says, don't have a cow, man. It was on many posters, thanks to Bart Simpson. Yeah, that was, like I said, early in the run of The Simpsons, they were really pushing Bart. Jim in Carbondale said, I taught a putty cat from Tweety Bird. Gomer Pyle, Shazam! That's true. That's true. 847 area code says Yabba Dabba Doo from, of course, from Flintstones. And how about Hawaii 5-0, Book'em Dano? Book'em! Book'em! Sanford and Son, You Big Dummy. Well, we have a whole segment on our Friday morning show dedicated to that. I'm not kidding. You Big Dummy. Okay, let's get back to this. So we had what you talking about, Willis? We had that one, and then of course, it wasn't even a word, much less a phrase. But everybody remembers the Fonz and his famous utterance, and his jacket is in the Smithsonian. Arthur got away with delivering A, usually with a pair of thumbs up. If you aren't a fan of this catchphrase, we have another Happy Days line for you. Sit on it. Here's a good one. That's what she said. Michael Scott didn't invent the phrase, that's what she said, but he did help popularize the double entendre punchline on The Office. If there's one phrase from modern sitcoms that has entered popular culture, it is this one. We thought new catchphrases were difficult to make successful, but maybe not that hard. But that's what she said. Funny every time he says it. Funny every time Michael Scott says it. Book'em Dano, as we have mentioned already, usually catchphrases come from comedies. They get a laugh on the show, and it goes well to repeatedly keep trying to get that laugh. On occasion, though, dramas have catchphrases as well. At the end of most episodes of the original Hawaii 5-0, Steve McGarrett would tell Danny Williams, a.k.a. Dano, to book the perp that they had just caught. It wasn't always Book'em Dano. Sometimes it would just be Book'em. He would just scream, Book'em! here's a good one. Danger, Will Robinson. Oh, no. Not the robot. No. Danger, Will Robinson. Hey, robots can have catchphrases, too, this says. That was certainly the case with Lost in Space, where the Robinson family robot would frequently warn the youngest member of the family of impending danger. Why the rest of the family couldn't get a warning, why they didn't get a warning, we don't know. Now, sometimes he would do a generic danger. He would just go, danger, danger. It wouldn't always be Will Robinson. Sometimes he would do a generic one. But yeah,
that's always a tough one to use in conversation, because I knew that one growing up. My parents would say that to me.
Danger Will Robinson?
Yeah, they'd be like, whoa, Danger Will Robinson.
Oh.
Like, you know, slow down or stop. And so I do that by reflex, and people are like, what are you talking about?
People they don't know Danger Will Robinson?
Not under the age of 50.
No, come on.
You'd be shocked.
It's on...
people are not watching that reboot, man.
It's on MeTV, man.
Well, they're not watching
it. It's on Saturday nights. You can watch it after Sven.
Well, they may watch Sven, but they're turning it off for Lost in Space.
I don't know about that, man. You should watch it.
I don't know.
Just for Dr. Smith alone, the show is worth it. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, you got Danger Will Robinson. I'm trying to think if there's any other catchphrases from Lost in Space. I think that's probably the only one. It's certainly the most famous of all of them. But, yeah, okay, having some fun here with some catchphrases. We want to hear from you guys. What are some of the classic catchphrases from TV that everybody remembers? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also you can jump in with your Wildcard Wednesday request at 312-981-7200. Another round of Know Your Onion coming up after the 4:30 news. Get yourself ready to be able to tell the difference between a real news headline and a fake comedy onion news headline. People will call in, and we'll get two contestants to go, and we'll play two rounds. Tom will be your host, and nobody goes home empty-handed when we play Know Your Onion. That's coming up. First, though, let's break for some weather, and then we'll come back and jump right back into the catchphrases, TV catchphrases at 312-981-7200. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It is a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? We requested the Angelo Badalamenti.
That's coming to us from the 262. Want to hear the Twin Peaks theme.
Twin Peaks, yes.
Love it.
Welcome back, everybody. How are you? It's Nick DiGilio here till 5 a.m. After the 4:30 news, we're going to bust into another round of Know Your Onion. Two contestants will get on, and you will be quizzed as to whether you can recognize a real news headline from an onion news headline. That's coming up a little bit later after the 4:30 news. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. 312-981-7200. Having some fun here remembering some classic TV show catchphrases. 312-981-7200. Here's Donald on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hey, yeah, I was just thinking about Laugh-In. And Laugh-In has a ton of them. Like, Here Comes a Judge and You Bet Your Sweet Bippy.
Yep.
And very interesting.
Yep. And Sock It to Me. Sock It to Me was the big one from the Laugh-In had like 50 of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, Sock It to Me was probably the biggest one. That was probably
especially when Richard Nixon did it.
Yeah, when Richard Nixon, you know what, Tom, Google Richard Nixon Sock It to Me, because it's the worst line reading that any human being could have ever given. Like he could barely. I mean, I guess they did like nine or ten takes of it because he kept screwing it up. He couldn't get it, and then the final take still sounds terrible. He could hardly speak, Richard Nixon. So Richard Nixon, it was kind of a big deal for Richard Nixon to be on Laugh-In at that time, because Laugh-In was a big counterculture show, and to have the president there and to have Nixon on was a real big deal. And you know the big catchphrase, "Sock It to Me." Everybody would say that. Here's Richard Nixon saying it.
Sock it to me.
Yeah, that's it. Sock it to me.
What an idiot.
Yeah, it's Richard Nixon. Donald, thanks for the call. Yeah, Laugh-In had a million of them. They had a million catchphrases.
Well, when you have Lily Tomlin. One of the funniest people to ever grace this earth.
Yeah, I got to interview her twice.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's so weird because I grew up loving her not as a comedian, but as the voice of Miss Frizzle on the Magic School Bus.
Oh,
which is
all right.
A huge show when I was growing up.
Yeah, no, Lily Tomlin... is incredible. There's no question about it. And but Laugh-In, man, I'll tell you something though about Laugh-In. That show does not hold up. That show is so dated and really not very funny. I remember, you know, when it was first on when I was a kid, my parents and I would watch it and we would laugh and everybody watched it. Everybody thought it was edgy and really, really funny. It's not. Lots of talented people were on that show. You mentioned Lily Tomlin, you know, and so many other members of that cast were really talented. But, man, it's so dated. It's really, really hard to watch. It just is not. I mean, you watch it, you go, oh, my God. Here's James on WGN. Hey, James.
Morning, Nick. How are you this morning?
All right. What's up?
The great one from the great Telly Savalas. Who loves you, baby?
Oh, yeah. Who loves you, baby? Yeah.
I got one more for you. From the great comedian Flip Wilson. Uh-huh. The devil made me do
it. Oh, yeah. He had a bunch of them, right? Didn't he have more than that?
Yes.
He had Here Come to Judge, right? Didn't he have that?
No, that was Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, that was Sammy Davis Jr. I think Sammy Davis Jr. You know what? Because I remember that Sammy Davis Jr. was on the Flip Wilson show and they did that sketch. But Flip Wilson had a couple more. Didn't Geraldine have one?
Yeah, that was The Devil Made Me Do It.
No,
Geraldine.
Yeah,
that was Geraldine.
I know, but I think he had another.
She would always mention her boyfriend killer.
Right. All right, James. Thanks, man.
Have a good one, Nick.
All right, take care. Kojak, who loves you, baby?
So good.
708 area code says, welcome back, Cotter. Up your nose with a rubber hose. They had 9,000 catchphrases on Welcome Back, Cotter. They had up your nose with a rubber hose. A couple of the other ones. Then there was like, what? Who? What? When Barbarino would act like a dummy. And then you've got all of them had their own catchphrases. They had, like, Washington's was, hi there. That was Washington's. Horseshack was, oh, and he'd raise his hand. Epstein was signed Epstein's mother, because he would always have, like, a note, a fake note that was written by Epstein's mother, and it was signed by Epstein's mother. And then, I mean, there were obviously all the insults, the up your nose with a rubber hose and all that. I'm trying to remember some of the other ones that, because there were like a ton of them. Ugh, that show. I was like 10. I thought it was the greatest show of all time. It's so bad. 847 area code says, I love Lucy. Ricky would say to Lucy, you got some splaining to do. Mike from Novak Construction. Hill Street Blues, let's be careful out there. Yeah.
Does that get reruns?
You know what? I never see it on TV.
If someone does know where it is, I'd love to watch it again.
I think you can probably get it on DVD.
I mean, yeah. But there's something great about like just changing the channel and Hill Street Blues is on. Or like something you've been wanting to watch for a really long time.
Yeah. That always takes me back. This kind of thing takes me back to that scene in Beautiful Girls. The rich man, poor man scene in Beautiful Girls, which is one of my favorite scenes ever. Michael Rapaport going out to the reunion and is tempted to stay home to watch Rich Man, Poor Man. Matt Dillon is going to stay home and watch Rich Man, Poor Man. That's one of my, truly one of my favorite scenes ever. And he's like, no, you can't, you got to tape it for me. I'm not going to tape it. You can't tape Rich Man, Poor Man. You got to watch it with all the commercials, just like everybody else. Falconetti. Was there ever a scarier villain ever than Falconetti? Lenny and Squiggy, hello, ladies. Thanks for not liking Big Bang. It's not inaccurate. It's not funny, and I'm a scientist, and it's not even remotely accurate. And 219 area code says, beam me up, Scotty. Does he say that all the time? He doesn't say Scotty all the time, right? Isn't it just like, Scotty?
Yeah, I think it's not a verbatim quote.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those things where it's like...
It's like To the Moon, Alice, where people, you know, that there are lines similar that are said to it.
Yeah. He would just say, beam me up.
Yeah.
Like, or, you know, whatever. But he never said, beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get the gist. Just kind of, it's not like, Luke, I am your father. It's, no,
yeah.
I am your father.
Yeah.
But you get the gist.
By the way, it's the final episode of Friends is on right now, the finale. It's very touching. They just left the apartment empty. I'm going to sneeze.
Wah.
Yeah, they were just standing around in the apartment. Now they're panning the apartment, and it's all empty with all their keys on the counter. Very touching. How about this one? Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. Even people who didn't like football found something to enjoy about the drama Friday Night Lights. There was a lot to find inspiring about Coach Taylor, played by Kyle Chandler, in an Emmy-winning role. Of course, when he needed to inspire his players, there was one line he would deliver over and over, and even if you don't play sports, clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose, can inspire you. Yeah. Such a good movie. I mean, a really, really good movie, and then it ended up being a really, really good show, which is unusual. That doesn't happen very often. We have like a really great movie that also becomes a really great TV show, and that's the case for Friday Night Lights. I was so surprised by that movie. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. You know, I think Peter Berg is an okay director. He does some movies that
he's got moments.
Yeah, I like the he did one with The Rock that I liked early in his career. Was it The Rundown? Is that one of the? I think that was a Peter Berg movie that was directed by The Rock, or The Rock was in it, and Peter Berg directed it. The Rundown.
Yeah, is that the one with Sean William Scott?
Yes. Right? Is that The Rundown?
Get this thing. Well, he's got a ridiculous, you know, IMDb profile because he's produced a million things. He's got 28 director credits, and yeah, The Rundown, 03.
Yeah, I enjoyed that movie, and I like Friday Night Lights a lot. I think Friday Night Lights is a really great movie.
Yeah, it was a movie not a lot of people saw, but everybody who did was like, wow, this is actually really, really good.
Yeah. So, yeah, Peter Berg, man. Now he just keeps making based-on-true-story Mark Wahlberg movies. That's his thing.
Or the unfortunate mess known as Mile 22.
Yeah. But he's, you know, and that's his thing now, is like taking real-life events, putting Mark Wahlberg in it and directing it.
Yeah. Lone Survivor, Deepwater Horizon,
yeah.
Patriot's Day.
Right. That's like, you know, those are like the last four movies he directed.
Yeah.
All right. We got a break here for the news. And when we come back, we've got more catchphrases from TV shows. And I know there's a million more. And we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And then we've got a Know Your Onion coming up after the 4:30 news. And the news is next after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 with the opening bell. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. You're my Wildcard Wednesday. And who requested that?
So that's coming to us from Ron the Millwright. It's System of a Down doing a cover of Black Sabbath's Snowblind.
There you go. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, and we have been having some fun here talking about very famous and memorable TV show catchphrases. And some shows have like a million of them. We were talking about Laugh-In. There's like 50 catchphrases that came from Laugh-In. And we want to hear from you guys. What are some of your favorites and most memorable TV catchphrases? 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 4:30 news, we'll get two of you on the line, and you'll each play a round of Know Your Onion. Tom will be your host. He will read you some news headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or whether they are from The Onion. And then you win prizes if you do that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in. All right, how about this one? Hey Now! From The Larry Sanders Show. With both Gary Shandling and Rip Torn now deceased, the legacy of the showbiz satire The Larry Sanders Show has been on the minds of comedy fans more often recently. It was a brilliant show at its best, a pitch-perfect look at the world of late-night talk shows when they were still in their glory days. Catchphrases weren't spared in the parody, as Larry's sidekick Hank Kingsley would often deploy his, exclaiming, "Hey now!" quite often. In fact, in one of the first episodes, Larry confronts Hank on the meaninglessness of the catchphrase. That was a brilliant show. That was a brilliant, brilliant show, The Larry Sanders Show, and holds up, still funny today. Yeah. Such a great show. 1414 area code says, lost in space, Dr. Smith. Oh, the pain. Oh, the pain. Not me. Take the boy. It's Colleen in Greenfield, Wisconsin. Also says, Wimpy from Popeye. I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. What a jerk.
Wimpy?
Yeah. What happens when Tuesday comes around? You go find Wimpy and go, hey, it's Tuesday. Let's go. Oh, I don't have any money. Wimpy. Max from Joliet says, Lurch from the Addams Family. Oh, you rang. Seinfeld, whenever he saw Newman, it would be, hello, Newman. And a very snarky Newman would always reply, hello, Jerry. There's some 9,000 catchphrases from Seinfeld. Yada, yada, yada.
Giddy up.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's, of course, that's Kramer. Giddy up.
Giddy up.
No soup for you. But there's a ton of, there's a ton. There's Master My Domain.
Yeah.
Geez, now I'm blanking. And there's just so many of them.
I know it's they're not really catchphrases because they only get repeated like once per episode.
Yeah, I mean they become
hard catchphrases. Yeah. Like I was in the pool.
Yeah, I was in the pool is classic.
Serenity Now.
Oh, Serenity Now.
I still say that to myself sometimes when I'm having a really tough day. I'll just look at my girlfriend and be like, Serenity Now. Serenity Now.
What is that? You know, because he's in the back seat of the car. Serenity Now. and George goes, well, what is that? He's like, that I went to the doctor and he told me that I should. Did he tell you to scream it? He didn't specify.
My TV guide.
Yeah, he collects TV guide. No, there's so many. I'm blanking on all of them. You got the Hello Newman.
Mm-hmm.
You got Hello. And then you've got Newman. You got that. Yeah, just
Newman.
And just their names. They'll just say, you know, like Kramer, that kind of thing. So, yeah, there's a million Seinfeld. Beretta, you can take that to the bank. Oh, yeah, it's true. He had a million of them. And don't do the crime if you can't do the time. Yeah, it was Robert Blake in real life had those, too. Like, he was always, like, every time he showed up on Johnny Carson, he always had some, you know, he always had the cigarette that was never lit. You know, and meanwhile, back in those days, they were smoking on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
You know, they would have copious amounts of cigarettes during the show, but he never lit up. It was his signature thing. He always had this. He always said Robert Blake always had the cigarette that was never lit. And during those Beretta days, he was like really popular. And his appearances were always classic on The Tonight Show.
If only Toma could have lived on.
Toma, man. That's Toma. What Toma became. Toma became Beretta. Tony Musante as Toma.
We'll always have the bird with the crystal plumage, Tony. True. We'll always have that.
And The Incident.
Yeah.
Which is a really, really good movie. All right, how about this? How you doing? That's Friends, right? That's Joey?
Yeah, it's Joey.
Friends and Seinfeld were iconic sitcoms of the 90s, but neither of them really had catchphrases. Seinfeld has a ton of bits, but they rarely repeated in shows. No Soup for You was only in one episode. But one character in Friends did have a catchphrase, though, and that was Lunkhead Joey. Who would use that line on all the ladies. How you doing? Did he do that on the spinoff?
I didn't watch the spinoff.
Nobody. I don't think anybody watched
the
spinoff.
People made such a big deal about it. And I remember it was just going to be a big deal, and then that was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I never watched Friends, so of course I'm not going to watch Joey. I'm not going to watch the spinoff of a show that I never watched. I don't know, you know. How about Nanu Nanu? There's one from Mork and Mindy. Nanu Nanu. I think Mork had a few more. And let's see. Lucy, you got some splaining to do, which we mentioned earlier, but it says the crux of I Love Lucy was Lucy Ricardo getting involved in some crazy situation that invariably would go wrong. Then her husband, Ricky, would find out about the wackiness that had ensued. At that point, there would be one thing for the Cuban bandleader with his thick accent to say. It was time for Lucy to do some splaining. She was always trying to be an act at the club. That was another thing about I Love Lucy. She always wanted to be on it. She always wanted to be in the show at the club.
Didn't SNL do a sketch within the last couple of seasons where it was all about how Lucy was like secretly gay with her neighbor or something like that?
Oh.
Mm. And the whole joke was that the men were just completely oblivious and really dumb.
Yeah, that might be.
I want to say they did, and I thought it was so funny.
Jeez, SNL, you want to talk about catchphrases? Good Lord. We could be here all day with the SNL catchphrases. Because everybody had all the characters, you know what I mean? That was one of the things that was that SNL is guilty of forcing catchphrases down your throat, especially if they don't work. I remember when John Lovitz had a character that he did on Weekend Update. Called Frenchie, and he would just go, "I'm Frenchie." That wasn't a bad John Lovitz there for a second.
That was pretty good.
Wow.
I got to give you that.
Wow. I didn't know I could do a John Lovitz impression.
And now Chicago's very own John Lovitz impersonator.
Because he would be like, yeah, that's the ticket. When he was he was the liar.
Yeah, I'm not a huge John Lovitz guy.
Neither am I. But I just remember them really trying to, because I remember my friends and I watching it one night, and he's like, "I'm Frenchie." And we were like, "No, man.
Please stop.
People are not going to be buying I'm Frenchie t-shirts. Well, I know that's what you're pushing for here."
Yeah. And they would really force characters, too. Like, I never found It's Pat particularly funny.
Well, okay. I mean, the bit was, it's just one bit. Okay, you know what I mean? It's like, is he or is it a she? Did you see the movie?
Yeah, unfortunately. And the one, I think they did one on SNL with Linda Hamilton.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that was a big one.
That was a very, very popular character. But I just want to say, I thought Julia Sweeney did a nice job with the character.
I think she's super funny.
Yeah, I think she's great. But I mean, it's just a one-joke thing. And that joke grew tired, but I loved her care. I loved the way she played the character. I thought she was really committed to it. The movie was one of the worst. It's the worst SNL, and there have been a lot of bad SNL movies, but It's Pat's absolutely the worst SNL movie. But yeah, catchphrases. I'm Chevy Chase and you're not. I mean, just a litany of them of from Saturday Night Live. You could go all day with catchphrases from SNL. Did you like Subliminal Man?
Yeah,
Kevin Nealon doing so. You don't
it
like
was,
Kevin?
It was pretty funny.
It's funny, man.
I'm not huge into Kevin Nealon, but I recognize the talent.
Here's the weird thing about Kevin Nealon: wasn't crazy about him. And then you've got the Hans and Franz
is great.
We're here to pump you up. That's another one. I mean, like I said, there's a million catchphrases. Here's the thing about Kevin Nealon: thought he was just okay on SNL. Thought he was pretty good on Update when he was doing Update. I thought he did a pretty good job. But I like Kevin Nealon now more than I did on SNL.
Yeah.
Like his stand-up and post-SNL. Yeah, like his appearances in movies on TV shows and doing stand-up.
Yeah.
I think he's much funnier now than he was on SNL.
He was on the show Weeds, right?
Yeah. He was great on Weeds. I remember
really liking him and being like, wow, this guy?
The
like kind of average cast member?
Yeah. He's great on Weeds. So he was his funniest stuff came after SNL, man. I'm convinced. So, all right, let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back with more catchphrases. And now they're opening up a can of worms with SNL. Seriously. We could be till next Thursday. We could talk about catchphrases from SNL. Superstar. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I'm 50. Those are just my Molly Shannon. I'm 50. 50 years old. I like to kick and stretch and kick. I'm 50. You know how much I love Molly Shannon, right?
Oh, yeah. We've gone over this.
I adore her. She's my favorite female cast member in the history of SNL. And I got to meet her, and she was very, very flirty and very nice.
Part of one of the most disturbing episodes of Hannibal.
Oh, man.
Cut from broadcast.
Yeah, they didn't show it. They didn't broadcast it. Yeah. She's great. All right, here's your forecast. Let's do the forecast. We'll come back. We got more catchphrases. And then after 4:30, get your phone number ringing. That would be 312-981-7200. The first two people through will be our two contestants to play Know Your Onion. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And Wildcard Wednesday continues. You've been Wildcard Wednesday. All right. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Mr. B. That's Buffalo Springfield with Mr. Soul.
Yes, sir. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are talking about memorable TV show catchphrases, and there are so many of them. From so many different shows, and we mentioned SNL. There's like 6,000 catchphrases that, you know, from the show. There's a million of them, but we're talking catchphrases from a bunch of TV shows. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Good Hi. Morning. How you doing, Nick?
All right.
I got one no one's mentioned yet, and one of my favorite shows of all time, The Odd Couple. Oscar, Oscar, Oscar.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, that's another TV show based on a movie that was great.
Yeah, classic
great,
show.
Great
I
movie,
it so
great
much.
Show. Yeah, it's fantastic. All right, thanks, Dave.
You bet. Bye.
Yeah. That's a movie that I've probably seen 8 million times. Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau in that movie. Unbelievably funny. So, and I will say this in theater history, you know, I've seen the play a bunch of times on stage, and in theater history, if we were to talk one of the hardest and most difficult entrances that any character has to have. Is whoever's playing Felix in a production of The Odd Couple, that entrance that he makes is incredibly difficult because the opening scene of The Odd Couple at the poker table with all the guys is genius. And you got to enter after that? Felix has to enter after that? I mean, my God. Because it's so funny and so well written, and it just kills. Bang, 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 bang. And then you have to come in after that. All right. How about this? How about, is that your final answer? The brief period of time when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was the biggest show in the world. It was a primetime game show. It ran 5 days a week. Game shows didn't seem like a place to spawn catchphrases, but Regis Philbin's line that he would deliver to every contestant before revealing the right or wrong answer took the country by storm, just like the show.
Genius. Genius.
Is that your final answer? Oh, my God. They killed Kenny. You bastards. They don't have the you bastards part here.
No.
South Park made quite a splash when it debuted. It was crass and rude and featured animated kids doing crazy things. Also, one of them got killed in every episode when poor Kenny would bite the bullet. It would usually be Stan, would exclaim the line. Then usually Kyle would follow up with something a little more vulgar.
That was one of the best gifts we ever gave my dad for Father's Day was a pair of socks. That said, had Kenny on it with, like, you know, crawling with rats. It said, "You killed Kenny," because my dad's name was Ken.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool. 309 area code says, Wimpy never stated what Tuesday. He's a liar. Wimpy's a liar. I don't trust Wimpy. Buy me a hamburger and I'll pay you Tuesday. Shut up. And you know when Tuesday comes around, Wimpy's going to be on a bus somewhere leaving. No way he's going to pay you back for that hamburger.
Halfway to Poughkeepsie.
He's an idiot. 312 area code says, they're real and they're spectacular. Another Seinfeld line. Oh, here's a good one. Tom Smothers to his brother Dick, Mom always liked you best. Yeah, that's pretty legendary. I mentioned Nanu Nanu. We also have 872 area code reminds us that there's also Shazbot.
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 I think that also got used in either Futurama or The Simpsons. I want to say it was Futurama. Fry would frequently say, ah, Shazbot.
Yeah, I don't remember. They've got some catchphrases on Futurama, don't they?
Yeah, bite my shiny metal butt.
Yeah. Well, everything Bender says is great.
Yeah.
I love that character. All right, how about this? Live long and prosper.
Easy.
The wide cultural impact that Star Trek ended up having is kind of crazy. In its initial run, it wasn't that popular and almost got canceled after only a couple of seasons. It took a write-in campaign to get another season. And to get syndication, it helped spawn one of the biggest sci-fi properties ever. There is one line associated with Star Trek, though. It's Spock's famous farewell address, usually accompanied with an equally iconic hand gesture. Yeah. How about this? Nom! This is the rare catchphrase not said by a specific person. It's not just one character from Cheers who would exclaim Norm when the barfly would amble into Sam Malone's establishment. Basically, everybody in the bar would shout out Norm when he swung into Cheers to take his usual seat. Norm was far from the most important character on Cheers, but he's the one that got all the love. Are there other catchphrases from Cheers? I don't think there were. I mean,
Norm was the big one.
Yeah.
Everybody shouting Norm.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of catchphrase stuff on Cheers. It was just because the writing was so good, they didn't need catchphrases.
Yeah, it's just exceedingly clever.
Yeah, exactly. Cheers and Frasier, both of those shows, brilliant. Brilliant. And hold up. So does Taxi. Taxi's another one of those shows that holds up, man. We mentioned Kiss My Grits from Alice. You may not know the show that Kiss My Grits came from. You may not know the character who said it. It's not from a sitcom that has really stood the test of time. Really? People don't know that's from Alice? People don't know that's Flo? Is that true? That people don't know Kiss My Grits came from Alice and from Flo? I don't agree with that. Yet you can pretty much guarantee that you've heard this catchphrase, and it's one that's echoed through the ages. Now, if you're wondering, it was a catchphrase from Flo on the series Alice. Yeah. No, duh. I don't buy that. I don't buy that people don't know where that's from. Kiss My Grits is from Alice, and Flo says it, and I think people know that.
Well, when I first heard it, it was just secondhand. I didn't know where it was from. Mm-hmm. And then I finally, someone told me it was from Alice.
Alice. Yeah, good old Alice. Married to Ron Liebman for a while. Kaz, just want to remind everybody. Kaz I don't think there were any catchphrases in Kaz because it was too good.
He was too busy showing people how to...
Hotwire cars,
pick locks.
Yep, that's right. Kaz, greatest lawyer of all time in the history of entertainment. All right, we got more catchphrases, but here's the deal. We want you to call in right now because right after the news, we're going to jump into another round of Know Your Onion. That's where you call right now. First two people through will be our two contestants for the morning, and Tom will read you some newspaper headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or they are the Onion. 312-981-7200. First two people through will be this morning's contestants. The news is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio on Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man. Who requested the Risky Business Tangerine Dream soundtrack?
Coming to us from the king of the 80s, Ike.
Ike.
Yeah.
He chose the best theme, too.
Yeah. That's amazing theme.
Beautiful. All right. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Wednesday morning, and that means after the 4:30 news every Wednesday, we play a round of Know Your Onion. And we've got our two contestants. They are on the line. They are hanging on, getting ready to play one at a time. And so we're all set, and we're ready to jump into this. And you know what this is. Tom is your host. He will read you some news headlines, and you have to decide whether the headline is real or whether it is from the satirical, comedic newspaper, The Onion. So you say real or onion. That's how we do it. Are we ready to start?
It's time to Know Your Onion.
It's amazing how we get 60,000 people into this studio every Wednesday morning at 4:30. I don't know how we squeeze them in, but 60,000 people are in the room right now.
It's incredible. It's a feat of modern engineering.
It's incredible. All right, so we know how to play the game. Tom's your host. He'll read you a newspaper headline, and you let me know whether you think it is real or onion. And our first contestant is Billy on WGN. Hi, Billy.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right, so are you familiar with the onion?
Yep.
Okay, so you got to know the difference between a real headline and an onion headline. And so, Tom, take it away. Here we go.
All right, let's get a little theme music going here. Let's see. All right, little green onions for the onion. Okay, Billy, here's your first headline. Domino's is stockpiling pizza ingredients to protect against a disorderly Brexit. Is that real or is that the onion?
Let's go with real.
Let's see. Very good.
Wait a minute. That's real?
Yeah, Domino's. They gotta, because you don't know what the trade situation is going to be. So they are stockpiling pizza ingredients just in case Brexit goes a little bit south.
Oh, come on now! You got to have positivity about this move. Wow, that's
actually
crazy.
Their pizza's gotten a little better too.
Yeah. God. All right. Nice job, Billy. All right, you're one for one. All right, Tom.
All right. Here's your next headline, Billy. It turns out, according to a poll, men are avoiding reusable shopping bags so they won't look gay. Is that real or is that the onion?
Let's go with onion.
That is very real.
Wait a minute. What the hell is going on? what is that from?
That is coming to us from actually multiple outlets, but this one was coming to us from Vice News.
Because they don't want to look gay?
Yes, they're also avoiding recycling because they're afraid that it'll make them look gay.
What the hell? All right, I'm just disgusted with everybody. All right. Well, all right, Billy, you got one out of two here, so you got to get a couple more. All right?
Okay.
All right, here's your next one. Music historians uncover evidence of an 18th century Viennese boy band Mozart fronted before leaving to pursue his solo career. Is that real or is that the onion?
Let's go with real.
Let's see.
No, God! No, God, please, no! No! No!
I take it no.
Yeah. No, that's a no, Billy. That's definitely the onion. That's definitely the onion. All right, you got to get now, Billy. We're getting down to the wire here because you got to get these next two.
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
You got to get these last two. All right, go ahead.
All right, here's your next headline. A study finds that the average squirrel lives through the human equivalent of 7 action films every day. Is that real or is that the onion?
I'm gonna go with real because I've seen some squirrels and they're on those electrical wires, they're daredevil, so I'm going to go with real.
Unfortunately.
No.
Now, that one, Billy, that one had onion written all over it. That one had onion written all over it.
Oh, no question about it.
All right, well, you can't win, but we'll give you one more headline just to see how you would do. See if you can get this last one.
Yeah, I'm
curious. Okay, give it a shot.
All right. Here we go. This is a crazy headline. Hacked Equifax customer receives 10,000 stolen Social Security numbers as his share of the class action settlement. Is that real or is that the onion?
Let's go with real.
Unfortunately. No.
No.
A customer did not receive 10,000 stolen Social Security numbers as part of his class action.
Yeah, they're not going to give you a stolen class action. Oh, well, Billy, listen, you're not going to go home empty-handed. You got yourself a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. And hang on for a bit here, okay?
Thanks a lot, Nick.
There you go. There's Billy. He was not a winner this week, but he still, gets the very cool weather station. All right. Are we ready for our second contestant?
I should say so.
All right. Here is Lulu on WGN. Hi, Lulu.
Hello.
All right.
I wish I would have taken that test.
Well, you got one on your own here. So you know the onion, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So let's do it again, Tom.
All right, let's get started. A little theme music here. Okay. So, Lulu, your first headline. Sales of bulletproof backpacks skyrocket after this weekend's mass shootings. Is that real or is that the onion?
Oh, God. That is the onion.
Let's see.
Oh, that's real. That's real. That's
very real.
Absolutely real. Yeah.
I didn't know they made backpacks bulletproof.
Yep.
Until today, neither did I.
Yeah. Yep, it's real.
Oh, my God.
It's real. Okay. Next.
All right, let's hop over to some entertainment news. Hobbs and Shaw, the new spinoff of the Fast and Furious franchise, is pulled from theaters following reports of on-set mistreatment of cars. Is that real or is that the onion?
That's the onion.
Yeah. Very good, Lulu.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
Very good.
All right. You need a couple more here to get right, but that was good. You got that right. They mistreatment of cars.
I mean, they're not wrong.
No. All right.
Okay, Lulu, here is your next headline. Popular American rock band Metallica responds to British Columbia woman who fended off a wild cougar with the band's music. Is that real or is that the onion?
Oh, my God. Can you repeat that?
Absolutely. Famous American rock band Metallica responds to British Columbia woman who fended off a wild cougar with the band's music. Is that real or is that the onion?
It's so absurd that it's real.
Let's see.
Excellent! Yeah, it's real.
Very real.
She played "Don't Tread on Me" and it scared the hell out of the cougar. She was out jogging and she saw a cougar came up to her, and the first thing that she did was to play a Metallica song on her phone, and she played "Don't Tread on Me" and the cougar went and booked and left. That's absolutely true.
It must be a Megadeth fan.
Yeah, yeah. Dave Mustaine owns the Cougar. All right. You got two right. Lulu, yeah. She's got two right, right?
Two right.
Okay.
All right. Let's go to the next one here. Lollapalooza, the famous Chicago music festival that just took place last weekend, introduces eco-friendly initiative making plastic water bottles too expensive to afford. Is that real or is that the onion?
That's the onion.
Let's see.
Woo-hoo!
Very nice. Very, very nice.
You guys, you don't know how nervous I am doing this.
Well, you got it. So you are a winner, Lou. So you got yourself a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com.
Oh, cool.
All right, Lulu, hang on. Okay? There you go. And we'll do it again next Wednesday. That last one, where was the last one from?
So the last one there, the Lollapalooza?
Yeah.
That was the ending?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, oh, man, they posted this morning. Or something like that.
Yeah. But it's true, because if you want a bottle of water, you're going to pay $23.
Yeah, you're better off just trying to trade for a handle of vodka off a 15-year-old.
You got it. So Billy is our first winner. He got himself the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. And Lulu was our winner this morning as well. She got a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnati's.com. That's yet another Know Your Onion, and we will do it all again next Wednesday after the 4:30 news. So get your news and your onion brain going, and we'll do it again next week.
I'm just a woman, a lonely woman, waiting on a weary shore. I'm just a woman, but only human, one you should be sorry for. Got up this morning, along about dawn, without a warning, I found he was gone. Why should he do it? How could he do it? He never done it before. Am I blue?
So this is a request, I believe, from my dad.
That is correct.
Tell everybody who this is.
So this is Annette Hanshaw. The song is Am I Blue, and it's all the way back from 1929.
Leave it to my dad to request that on Wild Card Wednesday.
That's a great song.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Yeah, my dad likes to tool around on the YouTubes. Drives my nuts. My mom nuts. Drives my mom absolutely nuts. Like, he'll go on YouTube and just go... He'll go down those wormholes where he'll find music and all kinds of stuff. And
I'm still reeling from when he pulled up the music from Chess.
Yeah.
The musical.
Yeah. He didn't know it was from Chess. It was just One Night in Bangkok. But that's from Chess. All right. Hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. Okay. More of the catchphrases from the world of television, of which there are many. How about this? Here's Johnny. Speaking of catchphrases said in every episode, Ed McMahon exclaimed, "Here's Johnny," to start so many episodes of Tonight Show. He said it hundreds and hundreds of times, making it one of the most uttered phrases in television history. Even Jack Torrance said it in The Shining. Of course, at the time, he was trying to murder his wife with an axe. We mentioned Yabba Dabba Doo. Yabba Dabba Doo. Fred Flintstone didn't waste much time getting to his catchphrase. He said it in literally every episode of The Flintstones because it was in the opening credits right at the beginning. The first line of every episode, in a way, was Yabba Dabba Doo. And then he'd say a bunch of stuff during the show as well. We mentioned Urkel. Did I do that? What a time it was when Steve Urkel, the nerdy neighbor on Family Neighbors, suddenly became the household name. With his strange style and nasally voice, he was a broad character on a silly family sitcom, but that voice lent itself to his catchphrase, which people took to mimicking in Urkel's inflection. Did I do that? It got annoying, but it was super famous. Yeah, that's one of those shows that I never watched, and I've said this before. I had no idea that he was a neighbor. I thought he lived in the house. And then when I found out he was a neighbor, I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you people letting this kid in the house? I mean, I thought they had to have him in the house because he lived there. I thought he was part of the family. And then I like find out he's a neighbor, and I'm like, what's wrong with you people? Don't answer the door when the idiot shows up. I thought they had to put up with his idiotic behavior because he was part of the family and lived there. But no, he was just an idiot neighbor. Don't answer the door. Don't let Urkel in. You know, he's just going to break something and go, did I do that? And then just be annoying. And the Twinkie-eating guy from Die Hard's not going to be happy. Did you ever watch that damn show, The Urkel Family Face?
Never a fan.
Yeah.
I couldn't stand, it's Michael J. White, right?
Who?
Steve Urkel.
No, Urkel is, what is his name? Oh, I can't remember his name.
Sorry, Jaleel White.
Yeah, Jaleel White.
I was confused.
You get him confused with the guy who played Spawn?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I thought Steve Urkel would grow up become Spawn.
Okay. Yeah, I never watched the show, even though I liked the Twinkie-eating guy from Die Hard. You've seen the sketch that Key and Peele did, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So funny. All right, how about here's a catchphrase. Bam! A chef with a catchphrase? Believe it, when Food Network started to get into the swing of things, it found a star in Emeril Lagasse. Remember when Emeril had a sitcom? You don't remember Emeril's sitcom? Emeril had a sitcom. It was on CBS, and it co-starred Robert Urich. Hey, man, I'm just looking at this. Guillermo del Toro got a star on the Walk of Fame. I didn't know that. Look at him with his giant Mexican flag. He's awesome. Oh, all right. Very cool. I didn't know that. He became so popular that he eventually got his own sitcom, which was weird. Yeah, it was weird. Before that, though, he rose to fame thanks to his style, which included a couple of catchphrases. In addition to kicking things up a notch. Oh, yeah, that's right. We're going to kick things up a notch. He would often exclaim, bam, while throwing some spice into a dish. You know that frosted tip human garbage can. The guy Fietti, he's got like a 9 million. He's got like 9 million catchphrases too, because he's got Flavor Town. That's off the hook. He's got like 7,000 catchphrases, that goof. How about this one? To the Batmobile. So Robin had kind of a catchphrase in the 60s version of Batman. He would start many an exclamation with holy, and then he would always change what was coming next. But on the other hand, to the Batmobile was proclaimed many times over. This is how we knew that Batman and Robin were about to get into action. And it usually meant we were going to hear some of that fabulous theme song as well. I loved Batman. I still do. How about this one? Just one more thing. Just one more thing. Columbo. And Peter Falk was so good on that show. Peter Falk was amazing on Columbo. And it says, this is the last one. It says, and we end with just one more catchphrase. Columbo had some tricks up his sleeve to catch whatever murderer of the week he was trying to stop. He looked disheveled. He acted absent-minded. But it was all part of his ploy to lure criminals into a sense of security or a feeling of irritation. One of his most used tricks was to seemingly end a conversation before acting as if he had just remembered that he had one more thing he meant to ask, and usually it was something the criminal wouldn't want to hear. Let's see. Thanks to Nick and Tom. This is from Sam. Chevy Chase, Saturday Night Live, Jane, you ignorant slut. That was not Chevy Chase. That was Dan Aykroyd.
Mm-hmm.
That was Dan Aykroyd when they would do the point-counterpoint. And that was when Dan Aykroyd co-anchored with Jane Curtin. And they would do that, and she would always make her point and, like, slam into Aykroyd and, like, insult him and stuff. And then he would always start out, Jane, you ignorant slut. Which was really, really edgy back when they first started doing it. Like, ooh, naughty, really naughty. Now it's nothing. 920 area code says, Red Foreman from that 70s shows. Yeah, yeah, Kurtwood Smith's got like a ton of... By the way, did you watch Perpetual Grace?
I'm not caught up on it.
Oh, man. Well, the final episode was Sunday.
Oh, yeah? Well, now I can really like...
I believe, if I'm not mistaken... I believe that my future ex-wife, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo, will be having another job. Because the way it ended, got a feeling I'm going to be seeing more of these characters. It was great. Nice.
Yeah, I'm
great
excited.
Show. And she was fabulous on it. And especially, she had really, she had a lot to do. My lovely Dana had a lot to do on the last episode, too. It was fun. So, but yeah, Red Foreman, he has a lot of catchphrases. He insults everybody. Doesn't he call people like idiots or something?
Dumbass.
Dumbass, that's right. It was dumbass. 301 area code says, wow, I thought John Lovitz walked into the studio. Oh, it's because of my fantastic John Lovitz impression.
Well, there you go. You've got a second. There's your side hustle.
Yeah, that's right. I'm Frenchie.
He does birthday parties, everything. Bat mitzvahs.
You need a John Lovitz. I'm your guy.
Yeah.
Nobody needs a John Lovitz. Not even John Lovitz needs a John Lovitz. Speaking of TV, tomorrow on the show, it is time for our biweekly visit with the great Dan Feinberg. Lots of stuff to talk about. He was at the TCA convention. We'll get into that, and lots of new TV to talk about. So Dan Feinberg is going to join us to talk about TV, and it'll be Triple Play Thursday.